OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, very good morning to you. Welcome along to OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, or wherever it is that you're consuming us this morning. You can get us on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter as well. Donica Boyle is here with us this morning. Donica, how are you?
Good, Ger. How are you?
Well, we want to get you straight under the spotlight. Tommy Rooney says he's the 10th best full forward in Meath. Is this accurate as a club man of his?
10th best forward in Meath Hill, I think, maybe. Tommy's a big quarterfinal on Sunday. I think it's the first time the club have been in intermediate quarterfinal since 1986,
wow,
when my father was playing. So,
right.
It's a local game. There's actually one of our fellas on our team is he'll have brothers on the other team because
we moved
into our part, our neck of the woods. So yeah, it'll be very interesting. And the thing is, I think they're meant to be going to Japan as a family to visit another brother over to the World Cup, through the Rugby World Cup straight after the game.
So one of them definitely isn't.
Well, somebody's going to have to at least make some changes to the flights. So as long as they don't fall out, of course, on Sunday in Navan.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? Stranger things have happened in club football. Are you still playing? Are you back playing this year?
No. I stepped away last year, and I sort of at the end of last year, and I kind of, if I'm being honest, I jumped before I was pushed. So. So my brother is part of the management team now, and I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of dropping me, so or handing me a number 18 jersey or something like that.
There's nothing quite like club football, though, is there?
I miss it. I have to say, I miss it. I miss it big time. Don't miss the travelling. Don't miss the coming up and down from Dublin. Don't miss the fact that you sort of build everything else around it. You know,
because you guys are on the Cavan border, it's like
border. So, like, I live
not out to Ashburn, for example.
No. So I live just beside Croke Park, basically. And if on the way back from training, I get back up in an hour, which is fine. It's great. But the way down, if you want to be on the pitch for a quarter to eight, you definitely have to be gone out of Dublin before six at the minute.
Yeah.
Traffic is crazy.
Yeah.
From around Drumcondra up to the airport, say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
a bit of a disaster. We were just saying there that this is supposed to be the off-season, really, for the GAA journalists. But actually, there's quite a lot of stuff going on. There's some counties bubbling up with some big issues that may or may not be about to... big stories.
The GAA always finds a way to get itself back on the agenda, either by accident or design. I was only looking at it last night. If you remember the Joe Sheridan goal, 2010 Leinster final, that was the same day as the World Cup final.
Right.
That was Netherlands-Spain. And like, I remember we were working that day and it was just like, the World Cup final got utterly sort of pushed to the side. It was an analysis and comment on it. Yeah, it was the 11th of July. So, and I think it was an anniversary of the Battle of the Boyne as well, if I remember correctly. So, because that was the thing at the time, was Meath, Louth, Battle of the Boyne, and the World Cup final. And I think that brilliant Spanish team had just sort of, the Netherlands tried to kick them off the pitch, I think, in that final.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And all we were talking about was, you know, Martin Sludden and the refereeing decisions and what would happen next and whether a replay and all that sort of stuff. So, the same thing's happening again. Loads of things kicking off, the Davy Fitz being the big one, I think, that most people will be talking about this morning.
Yeah, so it looks like Davy Fitz might be a done deal, or close enough, close to done deals as you can get before there is an unveiling and somebody with a jersey
or
scarf.
Yeah, I suppose it started yesterday with the announcement from one of the betting companies that they had closed the market.
Yeah.
But in itself, that wouldn't really be...
No, because a small amount of money closes the market and that, and it's great publicity.
And it's a nice, handy publicity. But the thing about it was that while Davy had... The betting on Davy, the market had closed. Two of the other main contenders, their price had cut as well.
Hmm.
So I think they'd gone in by from 20s to 16s, whoever was second in the betting, and somebody else. So that in itself wasn't. But all the noise since that is that a deal is pretty close. It's on the back of a lot of the papers today that it's expected in the next 24 or 48 hours. So I think that's...
This will be devastating for Wexford.
It's huge for Wexford, yeah. Now, the thing is, I would imagine, like, if you go back to roughly this time last year, you know, the players went down to Davy to visit him to try and convince him to do one more year. So they're probably not that surprised, I would say, that he's not coming back to them. It might be a surprise that he's going to Galway, but even the travelling involved will be cut dramatically in that case if he does go to Galway.
Yeah, you were saying it's about an hour.
Yeah, I just took it into Google Maps last night and it was to Galway City, just for point of reference, from Six Mile Bridge, where I think Davy is based. That's just over an hour. So, you know, that's a lot more manageable than cross country from Clare to Wexford, to where their centre of excellence is in Ferns. So it was, Davy has referenced it a few times, it's a fair slog going over and back now. But where Wexford go from here now, assuming the thing is confirmed, is it's a big question for
them. Yeah, what would you do?
It's very hard to know because those boys, like Davey, he gets very close to his players, you know what I mean? And he gives them absolutely everything and in turn he gets everything back. So what sort of character do you come in and replace that with? It's a very hard question. And
it needs to be somebody who's going to maintain the style of play that they've evolved from being beaten out the gate at their old style of play to now being Leinster champions.
Yeah, well, you could make the evolution that now that they have built, or make the argument now that they have built that confidence in themselves that they can go and play and compete at the level, can they go and be a bit more expansive now? Would it suit them a little bit better to play a slightly different style of game? Because there was opposition in the county, as we know,
I think they went away from it in the last 15 minutes against Tip, and when they stopped being...
The counter argument to that, that style of play is very high octane, high energy stuff that, and coming
down.
So
they couldn't maintain it.
Well, Davey said himself after that game that, you know, maybe they just saw the finish line and just didn't know how to get over the line. That, you know, they sort of maybe froze. I don't think he used the word froze, but he just said that when it came to it, we just didn't know how to finish them off.
Yeah.
But in fairness, to come back, like Tipperary were absolutely awesome. This is as big a win. I think Nicky English described that last week as good a win as Tipperary have had that he's seen them.
Right.
So, you know, you'd have to give them.
Yeah,
he would, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think Darren McGrath is the perfect candidate. Like, I realise he's got a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, and it's a similar style. And
but this is the gig now. Like, he's never going to get the Kilkenny gig. Mm. He's definitely going to go back and take Waterford at some point in his life. But, like, this Wexford team right now in need of somebody to step in. You know, he knows what it's like to step in after Davey,
and he takes him out of Munster as well, which probably you know, avoids the initial.
And it's not very far to travel.
Not very far to travel. Yeah, he'd be a good shout. Now he has commitments in Laois.
He does. Coaching in Laois.
So whether he could work that or not, but it'd certainly be very interesting. Very interesting because it strikes me as sort of similar characters in terms of, like, very very close to their players, and their idea is that they facilitate and get the best of everything for them to get the best of everything back. And he would be an interesting show.
Because that Wexford team are very close to being a team that has a bunch of self-disciplining, self-actualised leaders who are, you know, like smart, very smart guys in day-to-day life. Their day jobs are big jobs. They kind of, they know exactly what they're about. They're not a team of kids anymore, you know. So
and they've been around and they've won things now. They won in Leinster last year. They've sort of turned the great traditional rivalry with Kilkenny. They've sort of brought a little bit of parity to that. They could go into any of the Leinster teams now next summer and they will give themselves a chance. So yeah, it'll be a very enticing job for somebody.
Okay, very good. It's 7:39 a.m. this morning. We've got Ronan O'Gara with us. Ronan, good morning to you. How you doing?
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Listen, the Ireland selection is the buzz in all the papers today. The general consensus is that if anybody is carrying any sort of a knock, you don't play them into this game. But the other thing is that you've got to try and keep the sense of confidence that we have after the first game going. So it's a difficult enough balancing act from a selection perspective this week.
Yeah, difficult in a good way, I think, sure, in the fact that a lot of people raise their hands, and especially in the back. So, I mean, getting obviously 13 people on the plane was proven very competitive. Now it's even got a lot more competitive considering four key players were unavailable last week, but the replacements did really, really well. So the opposition may not be as strong as Scotland, but they'll also be the home team, and it'll be a different, I suppose, atmosphere in the stadium. So you need to get selection bang on.
If Joey Carberry is fit, does he automatically get picked ahead of Jack Carty? Is that still the pecking order, irrespective of how well Carty played last week?
I think so, yeah. In the fact that Jack Carty probably, it was the biggest pressurised game of his career, and it's a lot of time to come in and have an impact, but also the fact that if Scotland had found their way back into the game, a lot of fingers would be pointed at Jack, and that's what happens when you come in at 10. But I thought he added to the team. I thought he was sharp, his decision making was instinctive, and he did really well. But I think if Ireland, which we all know want to go deep into this competition, if they do that, I think they feel like that they have a real impact sub in Joey Carberry, a real impact sub.
Okay, the other thing is the makeup of the front row is a question, because we saw Rory Best play the full 80 minutes at his age. Do you automatically put him back out this week just to make sure that there is leadership on the team?
And no, I wouldn't think the leadership will come into it at all. I think there's many a capable leader in that group, but I would think his plan will definitely have to be revised. If you look at the statistics over the last 10 years, how many times has he played 80 minutes? And obviously his next big focus is the quarterfinal, so I would think there would be an individual plan made for him in terms of probably he would be looking at maybe around 180 minutes before playing the Springboks, but he's got 80 now, so he probably in the next three games he probably only needs maybe complete week off, a reboost week, and play 30 perhaps.
Ron, that's interesting. Is it specifically the number of minutes, or is it like are there other markers about high intensity?
Yeah, of course there are an awful lot more markers, and some people feel better playing, kind of three full games in 1 week completely off and then go again. But the great thing about it is that you have an opportunity to find form like that and find your rhythm like that. But, you look at it in the case of Johnny, he has a great capacity to probably play cold and have a big impact on games coming in with little training minutes or even match minutes and getting his performance to the required levels. But everyone is very different and there are different markers, and that's where I think having a good understanding from your coaches about what certain aspects make players tick, that's hugely important.
Yeah, Sexton is obviously the main concern at the minute. We'd obviously love to see Robbie Henshaw get some game time under his belt before the South Africa game as well, but if you're Ireland and you're looking at Johnny Sexton getting some treatment on a groin or whatever it was specifically at the weekend, are you thinking, right, that's him wrapped up in cotton wool, we'll give him 15 minutes in one of the games and we'll keep him now for the game against South Africa?
No, I wouldn't think so. I'd say, no, Johnny, as I do, I think he'll want to play and he'll want to make sure that he's 100% for South Africa. I think he got a new knock or a new twinge against Scotland. I don't think it was anything from previous medical history. That can happen a lot of times in terms of around your adductors, your groins, your quads, strains with kicking a ball. But if it's a mild strain, it's not of concern. If it's a deep, muscular issue, it can be very upsetting for the mind. So maybe Johnny felt a twinge, or maybe he felt more of a twinge and he could be concerned about it. If he's concerned, then it's better, I think, that he doesn't go anywhere near the pitch.
Okay, so you just play that by ear and let it come back, and whenever it's ready you get him back on the field to give him some opportunity to get sharp ahead of the South Africa game.
Yeah, well, exactly, because you can get all the scans and all these kind of opinions, but also you have to give feedback about how your body is feeling, and sometimes some elements are missed in scans, sometimes you don't get a full picture. So that's where I think the Irish medical team is very settled too. They have a really good physical therapist, Dave Revins. He's been at it for I'd say nearly 20 years now. But so he really, I think, gets into that and unties a lot of knots. And it could be as basic as that, or it mightn't be anything complicated at all within Johnny's body.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we're going to need Johnny Sexton against Japan, so maybe this isn't a game where you're rushing back. Or on the other hand, maybe this is the last game that we feel like we will need Johnny Sexton before the quarterfinal, so you get him back out there. What is the good instinct on that?
Yeah, I would go with your latter. I think I wouldn't underestimate the home team. There's always one kind of bizarre result in sport, especially in a World Cup, and Japan didn't show anything in their first game, but they did find form, obviously, in a World Cup out of nowhere last 4 years ago in their last campaign. So you just have to... The other two threats aren't anywhere near as live as Japan. So in terms of dealing what's in front of you, I think Japan would be the difficult game. And then the other two aren't difficult in my mind.
OK, so we were kind of all expecting that there'd be a significant number of changes, that you wouldn't risk Bundiaki and you wouldn't risk Peter Marnie, even though they're grand to play, just because maybe that's the completely wrong attitude. Though the two lads obviously had a quite significant rest.
Yeah, I would think, Gerard, that there's four shadow teams is how I'd look upon it, in terms of your 4-23s kind of jigsawed or mapped out before the competition. This is what ideally a quarter-final preparation would look like. And I would say, as you say, there's a few moving pieces in the fact that Rory Best obviously has probably plus 30 minutes too many in his column. In Bundyeki Peter Romani and Johnny's case, they need more time. But I would say that they have a fair idea exactly who's playing and why. If you understand me in terms of the...
The four games.
Yes. So, you know, I think they wouldn't have a wait-and-see approach or potentially this, but I would say that this is all calculated in the fact that they know the 4:23 is a long time out. It would be discussed between the assistant coaches and Joe on a daily basis in terms of who's tracking well. And for example, Chris Farrell all of a sudden will come up for extra discussion because of how good he was at the weekend. And that's what happens in live sport, that people take their opportunities. Some people take them a lot more. And, you know, I watched the game back again, and Farrell was very, very good in a lot of aspects. So his name, you know, as long as he played like that, Henshaw is ahead of him. But current form too, you have to take into account. You can't have guys mind and niggles if you're looking at winning this competition.
Yeah, Robbie Henshaw needs to be able to demonstrate that he can sprint full out and not have any negative connotations for his hamstring. Whereas we know, we've seen Chris Farrell at full pelt, and it's quite the sight.
Yeah, well, and also, sure, I wouldn't say sprint in the first game. Can he react to it, and can he go again 3 days later and go again hard for that 80 minutes? Then you know you don't have a hamstring issue. You don't know anything from your first, run out, even at full intensity with a hamstring injury. Hamstring is tricky in the fact that they feel good, and then all of a sudden, bang, but you've lost your 6 weeks.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be surprised then to see Sexton start and to see Rory Best start?
No, I wouldn't at all, no. I think their plan is that they want to have everyone firing at the peak of their abilities ever since the kind of World Cup plan came. So for quarterfinal South Africa, how do I have my cattle performing to the best of their ability? And you know, I think that's where match planning comes into it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be a surprise at all.
Okay. Ronan, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Cheers, you're James.
I'm going to start with the pay-per-view this morning from the Irish Daily Mail. It's 7:50, by the way, if you've just joined us. You're very welcome. One eye on the exit. It's Mauricio Pochettino, and he's rubbing his eye, and you can only see one eye. And I'm wondering how this works. Pressure piles on Poch as Spurs crash out. This is Matt Barlow's story. Spurs' miserable start of the season continued last night when they were hustled out of the Carabao Cup by League Two side Colchester. They're saying the pressure is on Pochettino, and he's got one eye on the exit. I mean, surely, is it he resigning? Because Spurs aren't going to sack Mauricio Pochettino.
No, that's the first thing that came into my mind when you said that. Just like he's... Mm-hmm. Got to a Champions League final and has got almost no backing over the last couple of years. So, I think, if anything, maybe there are opportunities that will knock for him, especially if you look at how bad Real Madrid are going at the minute.
Yeah.
You know, that's an obvious one for him that he was linked with before. So I think that he's done almost as much as he can, unless he gets some proper backing in the next window or next two windows at the very most.
I'm kind of surprised he stayed in retrospect.
Well, where could he have gone?
Well, he could have been minister without portfolio, which brings extra pressure at all of the big clubs.
Mm.
Suddenly Solskjaer's going, it's okay. That vote of confidence you gave me yesterday, it's like, well, Pochettino's available and like technically available for nothing. I don't know if it would be if he was.
He's a large element of control there at the minute in sports, I'd imagine. Like he's outside of the spending, obviously, but he is.
And everything else, yeah.
He's the man, and he's unquestioned there, and he has an awful lot of very good players. So he'd have to go a long way to get a better group of players than he has, you know. So, and it's certainly not Man United at the minute.
No, it isn't, but you might get paid more money, you might have more opportunity. And then there's the headline. And their rugby coverage from Roy Keane in Hamamatsu. Sexton injury means Carberry in line to start. So the one in the UK is Jones defends call to start Billy. So Billy Vanapola is going to start against the USA. And obviously England are nothing without Billy Vanapola at the minute. If they're a completely different team, if he's not playing number 8. So the English rugby media think they know more than Eddie Jones. And they're saying, don't pick him.
Yep.
Rest him.
Somebody's going to get one of those calls spectacularly wrong over the course of the World Cup, and hopefully it's not the Ireland team. But if any Billy Vanapola, something happens to him, like you know, there's going to be a mini riot in the English media because, as you said, they flagged this.
Yeah, and like he doesn't need to play that game. There's a couple of games in that group that he does need to play, and that against the USA is not one of them.
No, no, absolutely not. That's one for, what is it they call the Lions team, the midweek Lions team, the dirt trackers, and what they call them. Yeah. I think that's one for them.
What have you got for us?
Just starting with the back of the Herald, we've Davey set to take over in Galway, which we spoke about a little bit earlier on. Michael Verney, with that the bookmaker is suspending the betting on Davey to take over. And the main story is is talking about Troy Parrott making his first start for Spurs in what turned out to be a reasonable night for him by all accounts. Missed one decent chance for a goal. I know Dan McDonald was there. But Spurs crashed out, which was a blow to their plans, I'm sure.
Right. So I don't normally read from the front of the Star, but it's Maura, I'll be Ice Queen. And Maura Higgins has said she can't contain her excitement as she announced she's going to be taking part in this year's Dancing on Ice. And it's not the Irish one, it's the UK one. It's the ITV one. So she's going to be on alongside, you know, that one of Phillip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. Are you a big fan of Dancing on Ice?
I'm not. But the Irish version, you would surely have to be on the list after all the sports broadcasters that have been called up. I think you're next.
So apparently Michael Barrymore is going to be on it as well.
Yeah, I don't follow any of that at all now, I have to say.
This is mad. So Michael Barrymore and Maura, you know, that's a motley crew that they have lined up for Dancing on Ice.
Yeah, well, Maura was always heading for this stuff, wasn't she? There's a well-worn path now from, you know.
But Dancing on Ice, like, it's millions of people watch it. It's like,
it's huge, is it?
Yeah.
But is it Sunday nights?
It's Christmas. It's January. So it's the one after X Factor and all that stuff. It's early in the new year.
Is it Saturday nights or Sunday nights?
I'd say it's both some weeks. So I'd say you do the thing on the Saturday and you get kicked out on the Sunday.
Like, Sundays, you're generally on the road coming back from somewhere. So it's just Sunday nights, yeah. So, yeah, I miss everything. Like, I'm back in time for League Sunday, maybe at that time of the year, that'll be it. So
I'm looking forward to seeing who else they have. That's going to be a very motley crew. You're putting Maura and Michael Barrymore, I mean, come on. Jesus, there's a blast in the past.
It's a long way back, yeah.
It's been a long road back, but he's back, baby. And then a remarkable outburst from the current Liverpool manager saying, give my job to Gero. This is, I mean, nonsense, surely. Jurgen Klopp wants Kop legend Steven Gerrard to succeed him when he eventually steps down as Liverpool boss. I don't view him as a threat.
Well, I suppose that was maybe part of the thinking when he went up to Rangers. But he'd have to do something with Rangers first, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
he'd have to at least do something.
Yeah.
So and if he oversees the tenure with Celtic, do the fabled 10 in a row.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, there you go. We think we have problems here with Dublin.
I mean, well, if it gets to 10. One last one from the back of the Star. Gavin's future still in doubt. So, Kieran Cunningham saying that Jim Gavin has still not confirmed his future. Gavin was non-committal following his All-Ireland final win over Kerry on the 14th of September. But he's making the point that because of this speculation, an announcement could be made as soon as this Friday because the Dublin Senior Football Club Championship kicks into gear, and so they would want the new manager to be in situ. Having said that, all the papers have basically anointed Desi Farrell as the next Dublin manager. Like, no competition, no doubt, no jeopardy. It's his gig if he wants it.
Yeah, well, Desi was... He's gone from the GPA a couple of years now, and in his sort of exit interview, he was asked about, you know, is he leaving to become the next Dublin manager, and he said, look, no, that's not on the agenda at the minute. But sort of widely thought around the city and around the country that if and when Jim went, that he was the next man up.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything has changed since that.
What have you got for us, sir?
So starting with that story about Jurgen Klopp saying Steven Gerrard is the man to replace him, there's a small bit on saying on Ed Woodward giving Ole... It's not quite a vote of confidence, but it's in that parish, isn't it?
Definitely, like,
which means he'll be gone in a fortnight, I suppose. And that's generally the way. Then there's the Pochettino stuff again with Spurs crashing out, and just a small bit from the Rugby World Cup saying that Rob Carney saying that Japan, this is Japan's World Cup final. So, which he might have a point.
He absolutely has a point. So Ireland needs to be prepared for that, which is interesting. That because I wouldn't have picked him in your head, you wouldn't have picked Roy Best and you wouldn't have picked Sexton, but Ron Lugar was like, I'd be picking them for this game.
Yeah, well, like, those boys were always going to be managed at some stage, weren't they? Their minutes were going to be managed at some stage between the first game and what was going, expected to be a quarter final. So,
yeah.
Whether they miss this one or the next one, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well,
like, you want them coming into the South Africa game.
Exactly. So,
whoever you get there.
So your point is play them in this one, which is where there's a bit of jeopardy. The next game, there's no. Like, we're going to.
The other thing is, you have 3 weeks, don't you? Even if something goes wrong this weekend, you still have 3 weeks, which is a reasonable amount of time.
Even if they've got to play the first 40 minutes and we're 20 points up, at that point, you can whip them off. The Irish Independent back page this morning. Day shot for outsider Cal as Davy faces Model D Day. So, did you already do the Indo? No, you did the Herald. Doubts hang over Sexton, but Kearney and Earls are ready to face Japan. So Rob Kearney does look like he is going to be ready. So he hadn't taken full part in the warm-up last week, which meant everybody thought he was a bit further back than the rest of the injured lads. But obviously Keith Earls is fine. Does Keith Earls get straight back in the team? Who?
Again, it comes back to what their plan was before the... Ronan O'Gara referred to what his plan was for them before the World Cup in terms of minutes. He probably would have started against Scotland.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, and now he's a bit of ground to make up now, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so, Conway played so well. Yeah. You're like, maybe we stick with Conway for this one.
Yeah, and then you have two sort of live options and a decision to make again going into qualifying.
Yeah. And then, sorry, that story is that Liam Cahill is going to be the new Waterford hurling boss.
An interesting appointment. He's did a good job with Tipperary last year, or this year. And obviously Liam Sheedy being in Tipperary and will be for the next couple of seasons, at least you'd imagine that he's going off maybe to cut his teeth. And you know, Waterford are a lot better than they showed this year, I would say.
Yeah.
Now it's a snake pit, the Munster Championship, but I think it's only 17 during the All-Ireland final, so they're still not, the core of that team are still there.
Yeah,
and a lot of that under 21 team.
Tipperary didn't get out of Munster and then win the All-Ireland next year.
Yeah,
so
I wouldn't. I don't think it would be quite that dramatic, but I do think they are an awful lot better than they showed in 2019.
Looks like Uruguay are going to beat Fiji. They're 30-22 ahead with 78 minutes on the clock. So this is a bit of a shock.
Yeah, we were looking at it there. It's the 19th ranked team, Uruguay, and Fiji are ranked 10th. So yeah, it's a bit of an upset in that regard. 19th beating 10th, and they're 90 seconds away from doing it.
Shouldn't Fiji have beaten Australia? Or, like, shouldn't Australia have had a man sent off, and that would have changed things quite dramatically?
I suppose it would have, but you always feel that, like, I was looking at the Russian team yesterday. They were out 4 days after their, or 5 days, was it, between their first game and their second game.
Yeah.
And, like, it's an impossible ask, particularly of rugby. Like and it's the weakest, one of the weakest teams in the world. I think they're the bottom ranked team in the competition. So, like, there was sort of grist to the mill there in a lot of ways. And
yeah,
I think we're going to see an awful lot of that more. Like, as you'll see, like a Super 8 version where you saw at the end the weaker teams in Super 8 sort of their challenge fell away, or even in the Leinster, the outside team in the Leinster Hurling Championship, like say the Carlow was this year, as the competition went on and it went into week 3 and 4. And game 3 and 4,
it gets harder.
It gets harder. They fall further away. You're going to see that multiplied many times over now, because they're going to be so shattered after the games.
Yeah, Fiji just had a penalty in the 22. Bad game management. I would have kicked that penalty, put them one score behind, and try and win the restart, and then give yourselves all the additional extra time. Because if they score a try now, there's 30 seconds left. It's going to be too late.
More
likely for them to have a restart.
Yeah, I suppose when you think of Fiji, you don't. That's not really the thing that comes to mind, is it? You think all the lovely stuff and the big hits and the soft hands and all that stuff, but they're very close to getting over now.
Yes.
They're done. No matter what happens now, they're done.
It is too late for them. The Guardian, the back page of The Guardian. IOC delays new transgender guidelines for 2020 Olympics, and United stand by Solskjaer. We're patient as Ole and team build for future. Moura miss seals Spurs penalty. Whoa, bad penalty shootout from Spurs. Lucas Moura and Christian Eriksen both missing. Yeah, that story is an exclusive from Sean Ingle. Plans by the IOC to introduce stricter guidelines for transgender athletes before Tokyo 2020 have run into the sand because its panel of scientists is struggling to reach agreement on such a thorny issue.
I just have the back of the Sun here. Again, it's Pochettino and Spurs. More Man United at Solskjaer stuff, but I suppose the one that catches the eye is just saying that, and it's something that might come into... it might take on significance down the line, but it's just saying that Conor Murray will again be entrusted with kicking duties if needed. So in a scenario where Sexton is on the pitch but his leg is at him like it was in the Scotland game, that Murray will be the man, and he kicked 1 and 3 in that Scotland game. And you'd imagine against South Africa, the averages would have to go up a little bit better. Yeah. Even though, in fairness, some of the, a couple of those kicks were pretty tricky.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because it's not hard to foresee a scenario where they decide they need Sexton so much
that he's going to play.
That he's going to play, but he can't kick, so Conor Murray's kicking then. So.
Yeah, because although if he can't play, if he can't kick, then do you just stick.
Well, he kicked from the hand, didn't he, against Scotland, and he didn't kick from the tee. So he kicked the
restart of the second half. You're right. But do you not just put Joey Carberry in? Does that mean not mean get Carberry the game time now?
That's the choice. But like, do you go into a South Africa game without Johnny Sexton?
I mean, I don't think you can win it. Certainly, we don't feel like we can win it. But who knows? You know, we beat South Africa with the standing out half in South Africa. The Irish Times this morning, their front page is New Zealand flick the switch and all of a sudden are ahead of a curve again. That's the Gordon Darcy column. And Yamanaka and Japan eager to grasp once in a lifetime opportunity. So this is a point that Rob Kearney is also making. They obviously let the lads into the photographers into the weight room yesterday.
There are some brilliant images from
posing with their weights.
Keen Healy was the one that I saw yesterday on social media. So
it's pretty big, the weight that he's carrying.
Yeah. Just back at the Times here, World Cup refereeing in turmoil. We've kind of seen a little bit of that this week with the World Rugby essentially saying, listen, it hasn't been good enough so far, which I think is in relation to that tackle you mentioned earlier on, the Australia one. So talking about that, and then again more about Solskjaer safe even if United slump goes on. So that's, as we said beforehand, that's the beginning of the end, usually, that talk.
Yeah.
But they've put so much into Solskjaer, I'd say they're going to give him every chance because that's their serious egg on the face. Again.
This group.
In fairness to him, he started so well.
He did that
3-0 in Paris, was it?
Yeah.
That game, the Champions League match. So, you know, there was a little bit of and then Rio Ferdinand is that famous, that's going to haunt him forever, isn't it, that one? The one where he's... He says, oh, he's at the wheel, you know, Man United are back, he's slapping the table, I think it's on BT Sports.
Well, and there's Gary Neville basically dry-humping him on Sky.
Yeah.
It was after that game, wasn't it?
There's a line in there and it says that in the last 2 years, their wage bill had risen by 12.3% to £332 million, 53% of the turnover. That just doesn't sound like good corporate governance.
No, they've been badly run in terms of buying well and the wage structure, where Alexis Sanchez came in and ruined it for everybody to the point where now they've had to make
everyone
a goalkeeper,
a high-paid
goalkeeper, and all that kind of stuff too. So Kearney is saying that same point is that it's going to be a World Cup final for Japan. We've got the Irish news for you this morning. This one here: Down Board plans to use more security at major club games. This is not a very welcome development, but at least the Down County Board are not shying away from doing what they need to do. So Down GAA plans to deploy additional stewarding and security at major club games this weekend after intimidating behaviour from some supporters and unattended young people, creating havoc.
With this time last year, wasn't there a spate of footage from club games and rows and...
Yeah, it is the season.
It is the season, and it's the kind of thing that gets an awful... Well, there are two things happening. One is that there's championship on and meaningful knockout championship in most places, so emotions are higher. And two, there's no senior in the county stage for something else to talk about. So
yeah.
I think at this time of year, things are never quite as bad as they seem with this stuff.
We just maybe didn't know about it in the past. There's,
well, I think we've more evidence of
stuff.
Have we just is it happening more? Everyone has a camera phone?
I'd say it's definitely, we're now more aware of the amount of time that it's happening. That's
Yeah. You're probably right. But look, as we were saying, I've played a lot of club football. I've seen damn all.
Right. But you're for me. You've got lower. The bar is low for you, lads. You're poking the heads off each other, and you'd be like, that's nothing.
We haven't been poking the heads of too many this last. But you know what I mean? People have that image, all right. But it's definitely.
It's gone, is it?
Well, I don't know if it's gone, but I'm not sure how much it was ever there. I've never played anywhere else, so I can't relate it to anything. But I don't think it's. I think people think, like, you know.
It's all
Harnan
like
and Kyle and going around.
Exactly.
That's a very romantic outside image of Meath football, I think. it's no worse or no better than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I'd say that was
the thing that drove Meath to their success, was that they were hardy boys and that was forged.
They're not good footballers too, like, you know what I mean?
No, look, absolutely. But like, they had good footballers the whole time. And then...
But all the good teams have those edgy guys, like Dublin now, the Kilkenny hurlers. You always need a couple of fellas who
Oh, look, I'm looking
the
over
terms
the,
of engagement.
I'm looking over my neighbour's hedge here, wishing we had a bit of it. That's all.
Yeah.
That's
well, it. You're a big appointment.
Yeah. There you go. So they're going to charge £2 levy on all under 16s attending the Senior Football Championship semi-finals in Park Esler this weekend. One member of a Down club who contacted the Irish News expressed surprise the county board's reaction to bad behaviour was, "We will charge you money." Well, like, you know, if it's going to stop people going in.
I suppose it just might, might deter people a little bit. If they're just coming in and cause hassle. If you are in any way interested, I'm sure you can find the £2.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, last one for me is the Examiner. A bit of balance. Donald Lenhan and refereeing inconsistencies at the World Cup. Your concern now is that they've given the referees a lot of criticism that there's going to be a knee-jerk reaction and somebody's going to get sent off in a big game between two big teams and everybody will be like, ooh, they kind of decided the World Cup there, lads.
Yeah, it's obviously not just the GAA issue where the refereeing at the start of the Championship is very different to the refereeing at the end of the Championship. In a strange way, it might work out okay for Ireland because I think they have Samoa last, haven't they?
Yeah.
And
hopefully six or seven of them will have been suspended.
A couple of their tackles yesterday were.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing that could, you know, a pretty innocuous game, Ireland probably through at that station, then somebody picks up a tackle that puts them out of the tournament or out of the quarterfinals. So, it's one that you'd want to. You'd hope you're on the right side of it when it does happen, but it probably will, almost certainly will be a big call that'll be deemed as an overreaction to this criticism.
Yeah, no, totally. So Uruguay have just beaten Fiji 30 points to 27. The last time Fiji and Uruguay met, Fiji won 68-7. So that is quite the turnaround and, a massive shock because Fiji must have been looking at what happened against Australia and thinking, okay, you know what, like, let's just get into this tournament here and give ourselves a chance and back ourselves and get that extra time spent together and see what patterns can evolve because they've got loads of great players playing all over Europe. So
they've no time together, but have they?
No.
Generally, the Pacific Island experience is that generally they don't get to be together, like they kind of meet up in the airport and that's sort of the extent of a lot of them. But there's always, I remember being out, was it at the last World Cup when I think Japan beat South Africa? And it was the best underdog story you could hope for.
Ah, yeah, it was
class. And there was one Japanese guy, you know, he was chaired around the place. Remember that video on social media? I don't know where he was watching it in a fan zone somewhere. And someone found an Asian gentleman and decided he was, you know, representative of all of Japan and gave him the high chair around the place. So, those underdogs wins those wins against the grain are great.
Yeah, especially in rugby where you feel like there's no chance of it ever happening and then it does happen. So, anyway, let's move on because we are talking rugby next. With former Leinster and Irish lock Mike McCarthy. First, though, here's Dave Kilcoyne talking about facing Japan.
What's the
Japanese team?
What's our impression? We were very impressed with the performance against Russia. We've actually toured here 2 years ago and we played against them, so we know exactly the threats they have. I thought they were phenomenal against Russia. You know, you look at some of their finishers. Lemeki, Matsushima on the wing, Shahore, Tukarev, Michael Leach, you know, he's captained the Waratahs before and he's over here now doing an incredible job for Japan. So they've threats right across the park. They play a very quick game, so we're going to have to deal with that tempo. They probably don't kick as much as many teams. We're expecting very hot weather, so it's going to be tough for us. So we know what we've cut out for us.
Yeah, so Kilcoyne, a lot of speculation that he might start in place of Healy at the weekend. Healy's press conference during the week was like, yeah, I would understand now if all of a sudden I was to be a substitute as opposed to a couple of years ago when I wouldn't really have been able to deal with that. Mike McCarthy is with us. Good morning to you, Mike. How are you doing?
Morning, lads. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. So we've just seen a big shock there. The first one of the tournaments where Uruguay have managed to beat Fiji. I mean, I don't know if you got to see too much of this game, but it was end-to-end stuff and Uruguay were, like, it wasn't a 9-6, it finishes 30-27 in the end. So, fairly stunning victory for them.
Yeah, that's an incredible result. And, you know, there's always an upset at the World Cup and we were waiting to see where it was going to happen. Obviously, with South Africa in 2015, that really is an incredible result after Fiji they were leading against Australia at halftime, put in a phenomenal performance against them. So, you know, that really is an upset, and it's great for the World Cup. Great to see Uruguay get that win.
Well, one of the papers today is making the point that Ireland just need now not to be complacent for the rest of the group. And it's true. Like, you can see how everybody exhaled after the Scotland game, and the performance is so good. And, you know, traditionally, we haven't always backed up our best performances. Under Joe Schmidt, it's been a bit better, but certainly previously, you know, we put in a great performance like that, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's grand. We've got this now. Only to squeak out a win the next time, or to suffer a defeat. So how do they guard against complacency? What's the best way of doing that from the preparation for this game for the rest of the group stages?
Well, I think in the past, before Joe Schmidt was in charge, Ireland were at their best when they were underdogs. Their backs were against the wall. And what we've seen with this Irish side under Joe Schmidt is that there is no complacency. He makes sure lads back up results after results. We've obviously had that dip of the World Cup games, the Six Nations. And for me, that Scotland game was just great to see. Back to business as usual. The team just looked like the team of 2018 and everything we were doing. That first half against Scotland was phenomenal. CJ Stander getting man of the match, back to carrying really hard, drawing in defenders. That first, one of his first carries where he drew in those three defenders and, created that separation in defence for Ian Henderson to run a really good line. He makes a big line break. Johnny Sexton, really cool, calm and collected with that kick chase where he does the dummy and kicks to touch. And, really clever maul try after about 15 minutes where you can see the research the lads have been doing. They know Scotland defend with, they mark the middle and the back and leave the front open and then just pile in and force the lads towards the touchline. And you saw Ireland winning the ball at the front and then, sandbagging the front so they can't get forced towards touch. So, those really clever plays that were maybe held back for the warm-up games really coming in to be used for the World Cup as we expected. And, after some of the World Cup games, I think Joe was talking about, I think the word was periodization, looking to peak, getting towards a quarterfinal. And, probably people during the World Cup games, especially after that England game when that word was mentioned, probably saw it as a bit of a cop-out. But, in all honesty, Joe really does know what he's doing. And I fully believe the way they've been training is to have peaked, not in the warm-up games, but to be peaking right now. And Scotland are a really good side, and we saw how dangerous they are against England in that second half where they scored all those points to bring it back to a draw. So an incredible first half, and then the bench to come on in the second half and see the game out. It was brilliant to see. And just important the lads kick on now in the second game, and as you said, there'll probably be a lot of changes. One of the things that really interested me there, listening to David Kilcoyne, was him mentioning a load of Japanese players by name. And I think before, if it wasn't a Joe Schmidt team, I'd say most of the lads wouldn't have a clue of a number of the Japanese players. So that just shows to me the detail they go into looking at this Japanese side, all the players, looking at the individuals, spending hours doing analysis. So that says to me they're in a really good place, and they're putting a lot of time and emphasis and respect into looking at this Japanese side.
It's funny you're talking about making a lot of changes. We had Ron Nogar on a little bit earlier on, and he was making the case for not making too many changes for this game. Rob Kearney's in the papers today making the point that for Japan this is effectively a World Cup final for them. Now, maybe the Scotland game is actually a World Cup final for them, because that's the one that dictates whether or not they're going to make it out of the pool. Notwithstanding that, like, we saw what they did, as you already talked about, against South Africa 4 years ago. So you have to take it very seriously. Do you take it seriously by playing your full team again, or do you take it seriously by making everybody feel like there's a chance for them to play their way into the team by making a lot of changes? I can't decide which I would be going for if I was in Joe Schmidt's shoes.
Yeah, I think Joe will be looking for consistency. He'll, realise the challenge of Japan, the home nation. They're really going to raise their game. As I think Rob Kearney said, it's going to be their World Cup final. We're fully aware of what happened in 2015 with them being South Africa. So I think Joe will go reasonably strong. I think there'll be a few changes, mainly in the back row, with the likes of Reece Ruddock coming in and Jack Conan at number eight, maybe Niall Scannell at hooker. Rob Kearney's back fit, Keith Earl's back fit training, so that they'll come in, I imagine. So I don't think it's going to be, complete wholesale changes, but there will be, I think, five or six key changes. And, I can see the lads going well for 40, 50, 60 minutes and then pulling all those you know, those, that front five off of you know, like Kean Healy, Tighe, Ian Henson, James Ryan, and you know, giving them a bit of rest and probably going a bit mixing the team up a bit more for the week after, and giving guys a bit more of a rest after this game.
So you'd start effectively the front row that started the last day, the front five that started the last day, a few changes in the back row. Would you start Johnny Sexton?
I wouldn't start him, no. I mean, if there's any kind of doubt and he's got a niggle with that bang to the thigh, obviously he wasn't taking the kicks against Scotland, and I don't think he's taken a full part in training. So, and Joey Carr, fit and training, so you know, we've seen he hit the ground running in that Italy game. He was phenomenal, and he won't have any problem with match fitness. He'll be straight in, I imagine, and can do a really good job. And Jack Carty's been phenomenal. I mean, he hasn't been in the setup for that long. I think the Six Nations last season, so you know, and he'll back up. And Richie Murphy, one of the coaches, has been talking about how those guys can do a really, really good job, and they know they've got full trust in those guys.
Yeah, well, if you were to start Joey Carberry in this game, it is a massive game. It's, you know, you're playing the hosts in a World Cup. There aren't that many bigger group games. Obviously, against a Tier 1 nation who is a host nation would be bigger, but there's not a whole heap of them that are going to be absolutely that much bigger. So it would give a lot of confidence if Carberry was to start. And then, do you keep Bundyaki, or do you put Chris Farrell in automatically now as a starter, given the quality of his performance, and leave Bundy in reserve and say, look, it's okay, you got a bit of a knock, we know you're crowned, but like, we'll get you back the next game?
Yeah, well, obviously Bundy and Pete are going through the return to play protocols. I think it's a 6-day turnaround, so I'm guessing they...
I think they're actually fine. Yesterday the news came through that they passed the third HIA, so they don't actually need to go through the return to play protocol, so they're actually fine. Am I wrong?
Again,
sorry.
I normally get it wrong.
Yeah, no, maybe you're right. You know a bit more about this than I do.
No, again, I normally get it wrong, but I'm guessing if there's any doubt, they've obviously passed, but why risk them? Bundy and Pete, I wouldn't say they would be risked. Chris Farrell played absolutely incredible. But, you know, if Bundy Aki's not playing, we know what we missed from him. His, you know, defence against Scotland, he really brought that line speed, which was maybe missing in those warm-up games. But yeah, Chris Farrell had a great game in defence and attack, so I imagine they'll stick with Chris Farrell and Gary Ringrose. I don't think Bundy and Pete would be risk, even though if they've passed the protocol. Maybe if it was a quarter final, they obviously would be, but I don't think at this stage they will be.
And if Rob Kearney is fit, does he go straight back in the team?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the pressure's on him, and the pressure's on Keith Earls. Yeah, Andrew Conway had a phenomenal game. Jordan Lama had a phenomenal game. So, you know, these guys, especially Keith Earls, he didn't play apart from the last game in the warm-ups against Wales. He hasn't had much game time. We all know what he can do. We all know he's an incredible player, but he needs some minutes on the clock at this stage. So, you know, it's a great place for Joe to be in terms of he's got two lads who are kind of behind Rob and Keith Earls in the pecking order. They've performed incredibly well, and you know, Rob and Earlsy will be feeling the pressure, and you know, no better way to come into a big game against Japan, the host nation, and know they have to perform if they want to be playing going forward in probably in that quarter final.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot of criticism in the English papers this morning of the English head coach in particular for picking Billy Vunipola for England against the USA. There's a sense that Eddie Jones is playing with fire a little bit here, and that, like, they're going to win that game. They don't really need to play him. On the other side, the point you're making about periodisation, they're obviously doing exactly the same thing. They want Billy Vunipola to be sharp for the big matches later on. So how do you balance this? You know, because if he gets injured, England are a completely different team.
Yeah, it's risk-reward. You know, every player is different. Like we mentioned Joey Carberry there, and, you know, same with Johnny Sexton. They're guys who can be out for a long period of time, come back in and hit the ground running and perform, you know, incredibly well and steer the ship. There's other players, you know, for myself, I know that I needed 5-6 games to be at my best. And, you know, maybe that's the same for Billy Vunipola. I mean, he is such a weapon for that English side. And, you know, for England, if they can keep the likes of those big kind of 5 or 6 fit, you know, Mako Itoje, Billy Vunipola, Tuilagi in the centres, Farrell, that, you know, they have to be in with a shout. But, you know, it is a big risk playing him, because we mentioned, what an impact he has for that team. And without him, he probably makes that England team, I'd say, 20 or 30% weaker. So, you know, I can't imagine he'll play long in that game. But every coach has their plan of how they want to, you know, get their players hitting their best form at the right time. And obviously, Eddie Jones feels Billy Vunipola needs a little bit more game time. I'm sure he'll be rested at the next game.
Yeah, so far we've obviously got our first glimpse at every of the main contenders. New Zealand clearly are the best team in the World Cup at this stage. That doesn't mean they're unbeatable, but who else has impressed you so far? Now that we've seen it, if you were to power rank, who's going to win it at this point? What are your top four or five?
Yeah, I think that New Zealand-South Africa game was, I mean, South Africa were completely dominated them for the first 20 minutes. And then, you know, just New Zealand can just turn the screw. And for me, New Zealand won that game. And I don't think they played, you know, particularly well for New Zealand. So that's a big concern for me. South Africa, we know, you know, they'll only get better from here. So those two, obviously the big two, and you know, it's looking likely the way things have panned out now with us beating Scotland, it's likely we'll play South Africa, I think, in the quarter final. And what an insight Felix Jones can give that South African team, which you know, in terms of tactical plays, the way Ireland would approach playing you know, a bigger, more physical side such as South Africa. So you know, that really is a trump card for South Africa to have Felix Jones within the environment should they meet in the quarter final. But you know, Ireland, on the basis of that performance against Scotland, they're back to the team of 2018. They'll be giving everyone a lot of concern and worry. You know, as I said, they just played so well in that game, and it was great to see. But and as I said, England as well, if they can keep those five or six key guys fit, I know they're a bit slow against Tonga, but they're only going to improve. And as Eddie Jones said, the World Cup, he's been to a number of World Cups, obviously with Japan, Australia, and assistant coach with South Africa when they won in 2007. He has the experience of knowing how a World Cup works, and you know, he counteracted some of the journalists' comments by saying, you know, you don't have to hit the ground running. It's about peaking at the right time. So,
yeah.
You know, they've all got their formulas, but I'd say those four or five teams, that's where they currently sit.
Yeah, good stuff, Mike. Thanks for joining us this morning. Cheers, man.
Arigato. Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
It's Mike McCarthy with a little bit of Japanese there. Even looking at the highlights of the Fiji-Uruguay victory there, Dunica, how's that going?
Well, there's an awful lot of tears. It's obviously huge for
both sides?
Yeah, for very different reasons, obviously. I was just looking at, like, I know they're different codes, but, like, remember the Fiji winning the sevens gold in Rio, and it was a massive thing.
Yeah.
And I suppose you would look at, you would imagine they would have a lot of they've a lot of the main things in place to go on and maybe break into the next level of competition, but it looks like they're going the other way. But no, it is great scenes. I don't know what the makeup of the Uruguay squad would be, but it's I'd imagine they're mostly amateur, are they? So
good question. I don't know.
Yeah. So right, it's a serious result. And as Mike was saying, those things always make it more interesting.
Yeah. The good tries though. It was like. Some decent rugby?
Yeah, seemed to be all right. Seemed to be. I just caught one of them, and there was just a massive hole down the right side of the Fijian defence. I didn't see, but like it looked like it was so big, it looked like somebody might have been down or something like that. It was huge. But
they were fully amateur, I think, or nearly fully amateur in 2015. They've only four full-time professional players. This time, they have 18 full-time professionals.
Right.
They've got a funded by World Rugby. They've got a high performance centre, and the Uruguayan government have chipped in some cash as well. So apparently this is the model for tier two countries into the future. And, you know, if those games are suddenly going to be competitive, if they're going to suddenly put up decent scores, then
I suppose it goes against the thing I was saying about Russia earlier on, that there was sort of grist to the mill, that they were put out twice in 5 days, and, you know, it wasn't giving them a chance. But that's... that will justify the World Rugby's stance on things now that they've got a little bit of a turn off the books.
All right, we're going to give you another chance to enter our brilliant competition that we're running all this week on OTBAM with thanks to Expert Electrical. We're giving you the chance to win a top of the range 55-inch OLED TV from LG. This is where you can watch the Rugby World Cup from the comfort of your own home in the best possible way. To enter the draw, All you got to do is share the hashtag OTBAM wherever you're watching or listening to the show this morning and tell us who won the 1999 Rugby World Cup. Expert Electrical is Ireland's largest electrical retailer. You can shop online at expert.ie or you can visit one of their 67 stores nationwide because there's always an expert near you. Now, after announcing his decision to run for the role of GAA president, former Armagh footballer Jarlath Burns discussed some central issues currently facing the association on Off the Ball last night.
If you address the ticket pricing, I personally think that ticket prices are too expensive. I mean, I've said that before. I think the GAA charge very often too much. Now, the GAA, the All-Ireland is the GAA's big payday. I think it's 60% of all games that the GAA organise at national level are done at a cost, at a loss.
Yeah.
If you look at, I think it's something like 90% of any GAA games that you go to from underage ever are free. You know, so you can look at this from a whole variety of ways. Mm. Even if you look at the semi-final of the All-Ireland, you could take, I think it was the Tyrone match, you could take a whole crowd of young people from your club and they all get in for €5. There are various ways of looking. I think one of the best innovations the GAA has ever brought in regard to tickets has been the season ticket. Mm. Because gone are the days now where you hear of the fella who went to all of the National League matches and he doesn't get a ticket for the All-Ireland final. The season ticket is really, really good value. I think an Ulster council reduced the ticket prices and brought in various packages, and I think that worked very well. As a result of that, attendances were up, everything was up, and I think maybe, yeah, we that's definitely something we could look at. But we need to consult our members and yeah. We need to ask ourselves. Fewer, 345 coaches working with clubs and schools throughout the country, that might go down to maybe 250 if we're going to reduce these ticket prices. But it's probably the same counties every year that have been hit with those ticket prices. I always feel for the likes of Kilkenny and Dublin and Tipperary, but, you know, they're walking off at All-Ireland. We only have one. I think that would be a price Armagh would be prepared to pay if we could get to an All-Ireland every 2 or 3 years.
OK, so it's Jarlath Burns in conversation with Joe last night, talking about a range of things. It strikes me that Jarlath Burns' route to being nominated is not the traditional, he's not marching the traditional route that GAA presidents come from. He's kind of actually a bit of a GAA outsider in that respect when it comes to the candidates who are announced. Is that fair?
Well, he's been involved in going back as far as Sean McCaig, I think, around the turn of the millennium. So he's been involved. I think he said himself that he went straight from playing into sort of GAA administration. He was part of that players committee that was set up essentially at the time when the GPA first sort of came on the scene, and he's meant to be the players' representative body within the GAA. So he's very well experienced in that regard. He'd know an awful lot of he'd know exactly how the GAA works. He's been both sides, with the playing side, now the administrative side, and now he's on the executive in Armagh. And he's his name would have been, in the very early stages, would have been linked to the director general job when people were just saying who would be out there. So he would have been certainly in the early stages of the conversation. So I would say that maybe this has been, he's been interested in this for a while, and what's happening now is just a formalisation of what people expected, I would say.
He made the point in that interview last night that the volunteers are supposed to set the policy, and the director general's job is to fulfil that policy. I think that maybe because the previous director general had quite a strong vision for what the organisation should look like, and certainly helped to drive what that vision should be, that maybe those roles weren't as clearly defined as that. It had certainly felt for a while that the role of president was largely going around and opening pitches and hadn't been as important in setting policy. So say post Sean Kelly, what other policies, what other major policy shifts have there been as a result of the vision of a GAA president?
Well, you're probably about to have a B championship on the back of John Horan's reign. So that'd be one. I suppose, not every presidency is going to have something as dramatic as Rule 42 and opening Croke Park. It's a time full of change for the GAA at the minute, and it doesn't necessarily handle change that well all the time. So
Why is that?
Well, it's a body that, and this isn't a criticism, but it's a body that makes its major decisions at an annual meeting that requires a two-thirds majority. So when you can change things once a year, with the exception of special Congress, when you can change things once a year and you need, it's 60% now, sorry, and you need more than 60% of the people in the room to agree to something, and for most of its history it was two-thirds of 66%, yeah, it's automatically hard to, it makes change very, very difficult. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think an organisation that size and with that much influence and sway, kind of sometimes has to move slowly to bring everyone along with it. But the stuff that's happening at the minute, the big change at the minute is the commercialisation of it, the amount of money that's pouring in into the GAA, which is sort of, there is a sort of a, without being too dramatic about it, there's a sort of a battle for the soul of the thing at the minute, and I think Joe Brawley writes about that an awful lot. And like, sometimes it can be overdone, but it is kind of significant. There is a massive disconnect between club and county. I think it's only getting bigger. It is impossible now to win an All-Ireland title without significant, serious financial backing. Like, it's I would go so far as to say it's actually impossible. The first thing Liam Sheedy did when he came in was make sure that that he would have the necessary backing in place to help Tipperary, like, yeah, set up that committee, that fundraise on their behalf and all that. So, you know, that wasn't the case even 20 years ago. You needed something, but you didn't need what you need now. Again, going back to Liam Sheedy, he was asked about what was the big difference between when he finished in 2010 and now. And his answer was that he says, well, geez, we nearly need a second bus for the size of the back.
And they do, yeah. It's, yeah, like 25, 26 people, yeah, whatever it was.
And that's only going one way as well. It's not coming back. It's not coming back.
Yes, yeah, so that is the new reality. That is exactly how... Because you can't pare that back. You can't say there's a limited amount of money that you're allowed to spend on this, because it'll be an outside.
It's impossible to police.
You know, friends of whatever county will end up paying for it. So technically, it's not the county board paying for it, but actually, it is the funding for the.
Yeah. So if you just have a private benefactor and he picks up, let's say, for example, a training weekend or a training week in Spain.
Yeah.
That's not like kind of like the salary cap thing in American football.
It appears
if it's done outside the salary cap. Yeah. It's there's nothing you can do. And can you tell private individuals that they can't donate stuff to their county team? No, you can't. So it'll be impossible to police.
So the money's never going to go back. So this battle for the soul, is it as pronounced? Because, you know, you're obviously still involved in a club. Like, does your club feel disaffected or unconnected to the Meath senior footballers?
Well, the thing about it is, Meath are sort of, because they're going well again, there's always a little bit more patience and wriggle room within a county, and they're willing to forgive a little bit more. So if you go back to, say, Donegal, when Jim McGuinness brought them from sort of being a bit of unorganised and completely underperforming to the, in terms of their own potential to winning the All-Ireland, if you remember those couple of years, the Donegal Championship was basically condensed into about 4 or 6 weeks, and it was played off, and I think Carol Lacey picked up a bad injury on the back of playing so many games, coming straight off an All-Ireland series, playing so many games. But people in Donegal didn't mind at the time because the county team were going well. But even that only lasts so long. So when people are happy enough to go along with things, they're not going to sit in their hands until October every year to play their club championship, no matter how much they're winning. So
the problem is just a fixtures problem then. If you fix the fixtures, everything else falls into place.
Well,
the separate. So you don't need, it's not a battle for the soul anymore if you, at the start of the year, you and Tommy know these are your club weekends, and there's going to be games these weekends, and you can go on holidays this, because that's...
They've been trying to do that, but in my experience, it didn't really work. It never worked out quite as easy. And then you'd know you'd be on a certain weekend, but it could be from anywhere from Thursday to Sunday. So in itself is a bit of a, you know what I mean? Do I have this weekend, or do I not have this weekend? And it's only actually when you meet someone from outside the circle who didn't grow up or come up with this, that you start to realise that it's a little bit ridiculous that, like, you know, you're essentially waiting on either at the very beginning of things, the Meath Chronicle to come out with the fixtures, or you're waiting on the website to be updated on a Monday. And, like, that's, people won't put up with that anymore. And that's not a Meath problem, that's nationwide.
So everybody knows what the issue is. But is the commercialisation really such a problem? When it's the fixtures that seems to be driving the disaffection of the rank and file. These are separate issues, aren't they?
It's a problem insofar as if when you need money to win things, it's going to have a bigger divide between the haves and the have-nots. I would say that the fixtures issue it's related, but it's largely separate. You know, if you still want people to play games, they need an organised schedule of games, people won't put their lives on hold anymore for that stuff. Like, they just won't. They're not that interested, particularly when, you know, you can go and play local soccer and you know that you're out every Saturday, barring the pitch being waterlogged, for probably 16 of 18 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
And you're playing 2 o'clock on Saturday out of home and away. That's it. That's a lot more attractive than, well, you're in it till you're out of it and you're you will be out, but 2 weeks after the county team are beaten. And for example, in Meath last year, went out in round one of the championship, round one of the qualifier, I think 9th of June it was, the earliest you could possibly be out of the championship. And this year, they ended up going out, only four teams went forward on them during the Super 8s. So, you know, that's, imagine trying to plan your schedule around that.
Yeah, it is tricky.
I think it's more than tricky. I think it's sort of, people will say, do you know what, I can do all, I love it, but I can do other things with my time here.
Well, you could have a 16-week inter-county season and a 16-week club season, and they could be separate. Now, the difficulty becomes the hurling and football run off at the same time, and the dual club becomes a big issue.
I've heard people say that, and it's a fine idea in theory, but you don't want to put any more of a wedge between the club and the county. And if you're separating them out,
so just separating the seasons, as in the time of the year.
If you're separating them out, then you don't feel like that you're, you know, you might just have fellas feeling like they're not part of the thing anymore. And the reason why it works and the reason why people care is because they feel like they're part of it.
So you need proximity to the inter-county team season.
I think you need to feel, I think what works for fellas is that they see someone playing in Croke Park on a Sunday, and maybe 2 weeks later they get a crack at them in club football.
Right.
Or to get to say, oh, geez, I played against him. Or, you know, I think that means a lot to people.
Yeah. So you could do that, though, in that, like, your club season would be April, May, June, maybe mid-March to mid-June, and then your inter-county season is the next 4 months.
But then you're leaving your club players idle from mid-June to mid-March.
Could you play league? Could you play something else?
You could, like, going back to the fixtures thing, like,
how many games a year does a club player want?
Well, he probably wants... Well, you see, the thing about... And I've written about this a few times in the GA, the term they always use is meaningful competition and meaningful games. So that means very different things in very different counties. And this is where the difficulty arises. Like, the idea that 32 county boards and four provincial councils and a central body are all making fixtures that should... that are all interlinked in different ways, and we're expecting it to work, is kind of madness. Now, the GAA have said that they can't go and tell a county how to run their business for various reasons. But I do think if you gave them and said, listen, here are 8 weekends, run your championship. Those are the 8 weekends. We're going to run our championship around it. I think there might be something in that. But look, loads of good people have worked hard on this and no one's come up with anything. And again, it goes back to the slow being hard to come by in the GAA.
In that way, it feels like using it as a stick to beat the GAA is unfair. That, like, people are working on it. There is a willingness to try and change things. It's just that...
I don't think it's necessarily a Croke Park problem. I think it's, you know, it's... You know, look, the 32 county boards would have very stringent ideas on how they should run their affairs, because maybe it's what suits them best in their particular makeup of their county versus hurling and football. And, you know, and if that, they're doing it in their own best interest, but it's probably not in the interest of the greater good, which in fairness isn't their remit if you're a county board. Your county board is to run your competitions you see fit. It's not necessarily to...
Well, unless what you do what Charlotte Burns is saying, and you go back to first principles, and every county board then has the same remit, which is to get the most amount of people playing the games as possible. And if everything filters down to that, then it's more games for more people at underage level, it's more coaches at underage level, it's better facilities at underage level, it's better... And that bubbles up to, why don't we all just have the same structures for our championships? Because we'll sit down, we'll agree... This is how a championship should be run. There should be a senior division with 10 teams or 12 teams or 8 teams, and there should be 4 divisions, senior, intermediate, junior, junior A, junior B, junior C, if you need it.
But how do you find a uniform championship structure that will suit, say, Meath with 40 plus 50-odd clubs, a handful of hurling clubs within that, and, say...
Cork, whose
divisions, if that's a better example, Cork, who have divisions and they have hurling and football and they have regional championship teams, you know, like, that they're so...
The regional championship teams are definitely, like, a little kink that's going to be very difficult to overcome for Kerry and I didn't realise Cork do it as well, do they? And,
yeah, they have, yeah.
I mean, that's a great idea, unless that's the idea that everybody uses, is that, like, you've got your club championship, you've got your regional championship later on, and that could be something that happens when the inter-county season
comes on. But there you're proposing to fix the fixtures by introducing another competition.
Yeah, but actually you have to reduce everything else and say you're not going to have a league and separate championship. I think there needs to be one way of doing it is to try and come up with a uniform structure that exists in every county, that is a number, set number of divisions and a set number of teams in your top division, second division, and call them whatever divisions you want, right? Mm. The hurling and football is also an issue. Like, unless you just say, look, lads, if you want to play hurling and football, you're going to have to play, there are going to be weekends, you're going to have to play two games. I don't know if there's any other way around that.
Yeah. Imagine the level of resistance you'll meet there. Like, look, didn't Coola have their lady footballers and the Camogie players last weekend out in, and they had to, I think they had to forfeit the Camogie game.
Same day.
Was it same day or in consecutive days? But either way, I think it was same day. But they, yeah, they had to, so like, it's such a thorny issue, and it's so like, I feel sorry for the people who've been charged with trying to figure it out, because they're going to meet resistance at every turn.
Yeah, that's so, the thing. It's like people getting games called off because, you know, little Johnny has a hamstring, and it's like, oh, you know, we found a great grand uncle who died four parishes over that we're going to get the game cancelled for. All that stuff. That's also the stuff that causes fixture backlogs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in fairness, I think county boards have got a hold of that, and I think there's a realisation among clubs that, you know, only in extraordinary circumstances can that happen. It's certainly happening less than my from my own experience would be, it's happening less than it was with games being called off at the last minute. I would just say that it just going back to the original point, there is a sort of a bit of a disconnect within the GAA at the minute in terms of what the thing is about, what we're trying to do, and who you're trying to do it for. So
is that true?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think when we spent an awful lot of the last 2 weeks, say, talking about money and development. Is that the first time in the history of an All-Ireland Championship win that we start talking about money? Like, I'm after ringing the last 2 days, I'm after ringing five fellas who would be involved in the new Tier 2 Championship in 2020, assuming the thing comes in. And they all have the same sort of, like, you know, they repeated the team that basically said, look, the fear was they'd be cut adrift a little bit. And, you know, one of them was Terry Hyland, the Leitrim manager, and he said to me that he says, that's fine, he says, but there needs to be a bigger plan. If you're putting us Tier 2 Championship, there needs to be a bigger plan, that all the money that's been made in Tier 1 needs to come back down. And that's what we're talking about now. We're talking about money. And it's fine, it's a fair point. But were we talking about money 10 years ago, to this extent?
I don't know. I think we've been talking about money since that strategic review in 2001. Like, I think since the new Croke Park happened, since they knocked down the old Croke Park, I think there's been a sense that the organisation is generating lots of revenue. And like,
which is a good thing, I think, by the way.
Yeah,
which
totally. And I feel like the story about the coaching that's going on, like, in the schools, isn't a story that's being told enough that people don't fully appreciate and understand. Like, so my kids benefit from the local games development, she's GDA or
GDO or something, yeah.
She comes into the school, and that's how they're experiencing Gaelic at the minute. And it's a new school, so there isn't a great tradition of it. But if the money wasn't coming, then that wouldn't happen. And there's a far greater chance that they're going to be involved because of the good quality coaching that they're getting from somebody coming in than there would be. Because she just doesn't want to go, and it clashes with the local club, clashes with something else that she wants to do at the time. So, okay. But she's going to get, I know that we're going to be a GAA family because this is happening. So I completely see the benefit of the money, and the money comes from the sponsorship, and the money comes from the central funding. So like, it's not a one way thing where the money is just this bad thing where Terry Hyland feels that they're not getting enough of that. The answer to that is to give more money to the tier two and to put that plan in place. Absolutely.
Yeah, but the point is that we're talking about money. And, you know, and we weren't talking about money 15, 20...
Maybe that's 20. An Irish thing. Maybe we need to talk about money.
Well, yeah, maybe we do. And maybe we need to talk about the distribution of it and all that, like, which is a whole show on its own, probably. But, like, it's just... it's in a particular place at the minute, GAA, I think. That I think every year we're going to break records for spend on county team, and the teams who have money are more likely to be successful. And
that's inarguable. That is true.
And it's only going one way in that regard.
All right. So it's 8:46 this morning. You're watching OTBAM, or maybe you're listening to us on the Go Loud app, which you can get in the App Store. Highly recommend that. You can just select off the ball as your home station. We'll be in your earballs 24 hours a day. John Duggan and Phil Egan are going to pop into studio next to bring us up to date on the latest sport news and talk some football. First, here's Kevin Kilbane talking about the state of Manchester United.
United's midfielders are not passing forward. They're taking the safe option far too often. They're not playing quick football. You maybe if the movement is there, they're not being picked out. The play that's running off the ball. So a lot of the time then, if you looked at the Astana game even back to Thursday, where they did drop deep, so that ball's not necessarily on, but there was never any runs, any little short runs around the penalty area that was being made, then trying to do the little toe pokes around the edge of the penalty area, Joe. It was never an option. Whereas whenever I think, and again, United aren't that team, so we've got to just put it all to bed now, but whenever I think of you watch of United teams over the last 20, 30 years, is it's quick forward passing. And it's something that, you know, I've been managed by Steve Bruce, played alongside many lads that would have played, or some lads that would have played for Man United over the years. And the constant message that they would even say on the training ground all the time is pass forward. Your midfielder's got it. If you're taking it on your back foot constantly, something that I speak about, it's maybe a little bit of a concern that I would have when I'm watching the Irish team. Switching play or passing forward, we don't see it enough. We don't put demands on each other enough, I think, at times. And I think that's what United aren't doing.
Yeah, Man United not passing forward. A bit like Ireland, says Kevin Kilbane. John and Phil are here. How are you guys getting on?
Great. Good morning, Ger and Tunica.
How are you, lads?
Pochettino, one eye on the exit. Who's got the eye on the exit? That was the headline on the back of the Mail this morning. What do you think, John? Pochettino's not leaving, is he?
He's not leaving, but he's not happy. It's funny, I put on Twitter last night, I wouldn't be surprised if the next manager at Tottenham is Jose Mourinho. Lives in London, got nothing to do, is in the Sky studio, wins trophies, which Spurs can't seem to do.
Ooh.
But Pochettino's been
happy with that? Are you already in your mindset moving on from Pochettino?
Fickle
fans.
Yeah, the fickle jetty. I'm just a bit worried what's going on at the moment. I think the Spurs are in a cycle. And I think that Pochettino needs to get into the cycle, because all I'm hearing at the moment is I'm talking about agendas and unsettled players and just getting a constant sense of frustration. I thought they put this to bed ahead of the Palace game. They beat Palace 4-0 in the first half, won 4-0, but then they had that poor result in Greece when they were 2-0 up. They were 2-0 up against Arsenal. Their form since February has been pretty poor. I think Oliver Kay put a tweet out about it last night. And 2 wins from 8 this season. Something's not right in the state of Denmark, probably Christian Eriksen. So not rotten yet, but worrying.
Should they move on from Pochettino, or should they just back him, give him a little money?
They should back him, but they gave him money. But the Dybala thing, if they just got Dybala in, that would have been great. But Lo Celso and Ndombele, they haven't settled yet. Lo Celso's injured. It seems to me Tottenham have got to the end of a cycle. Clubs go through cycles. Spurs in 2016, they were chasing Leicester for the title. In 2017, they were second. Their best result since 1963. I think the Champions League run, a little bit like Arsenal in 06, was probably 2 years after their peak. And I think they're going through a cycle. Eriksen doesn't want to be there. Rose, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, maybe we're looking at them tipping to an age where they're not as effective as they were. And that then creates a problem because they're defensively not as solid. And that's the problem that Tottenham are going to face now.
So they've got 8 points so far this season. They're level with Manchester United on points.
They need Ed Woodward's money. Give us Ed Woodward's money.
They're a point ahead of Everton all the same.
Almost everyone's ahead of Everton at the minute.
The mighty Everton. What the hell's going on there? You're an Everton fan, I should point out.
I'll admit now that I hacked into a stream on Saturday afternoon, and whatever the 3 o'clock game was on, and I was watching Everton on the stream, and they were absolutely brutal. Like, they were really, really
awful. Sheffield United didn't have to do anything.
Sheffield United were bad. Afterwards, their manager was like, oh, we didn't play very well here at all.
They just had to sit in the shape that they play in, this three at the back. John Egan was very good.
He was very good, yeah. And they just seemed to completely be devoid of ideas. That an awful lot of it is meant to go through Gylfie Sigurdsson. He wasn't particularly effective. Richarlison is a very good player when he's good, but I think he can be anonymous when he's not at it.
It's the same as Gylfie. Like,
yeah,
great when he's great, but
same with Bernard.
And they have
so many of those players that on their day, if they click, they can be brilliant. I have a feeling they'll click in a Merseyside derby. They seem to love that game. They're playing City this weekend.
City's tough.
Yeah. I actually thought if they lost last night and lost to City this weekend, Marco Silva could be on the way out.
They've shown him serious, like, back, and you know, like bar that strong finish to the season last year, would have beat who was it, United and Arsenal and a couple of other the top teams. I think he would have survived, but I think he would have been on that Sheffield United game could have tipped him over the edge. Yeah. But no, it's never boring sport, never.
No, we're going to talk about Troy Parrott with Dan, and John's going to stay with us for that. But Phil, you're going to have to go and do some stuff. So yeah, what are the 8:52? Give us the sports news.
Well, the big story of the day, Uruguay. They have their third ever Rugby World Cup win. They've beaten Fiji 30-27. Their previous wins were in 1999 against Spain and 2003 against Georgia. Didn't even qualify for the 2015 World Cup. This is their biggest World Cup win of them all, and like it's only last Saturday when Fiji ran Australia close. Fiji led the Wallabies with 20 minutes of play, but clearly underestimated Uruguay today. Uruguay were 24-12 up at half time. You still expected Fiji to come back, but they missed too many kicks. Fiji actually scored 5 tries to Uruguay's 3, but 4 missed conversions for Fiji, and that is a bit of a shocker from them. You mentioned Troy Parrott. He obviously made his competitive debut for Tottenham last night. Played just over an hour, was replaced by Christian Eriksen in Tottenham's defeat to Colchester. Finished nil all after 90 minutes, but as is the new format, goes straight to penalties. Colchester won 4-3, and it was Eriksen who had a penalty save. Lucas Moura hit the crossbar. Tom Lapsley stepped up to score the winning spot kick for Colchester. If you saw the shootout as well, you see one of the Colchester players attempted a Panenka, which didn't end well. Gazzaniga got to his feet and punched the ball away in disgust, almost to say, how dare you even try that on me, you know. So I'd say he was...
Imagine if you'd gone out with Colchester and you tried the Panenka. You'd be like, really?
See, some of the players...
Not the time.
Some of the players were shaking their heads, looking at him going, what have you done? Like, why would you do this to us?
Or else it's like the biggest cojones of all time, and the fact that it failed, we should be encouraging him. I can't decide.
Yeah, you have to get it right.
I feel like it should be the Spurs guy trying it, isn't it? Rather than the Colchester guy.
He hit the bar, didn't he?
Yeah. But no problems for holders. Manchester City, they won 3-0 away to Preston. Raheem Sterling and Gabriel Jesus among the goals. Arsenal beat Nottingham Forest 5-0. Gabriel Martinelli got 2, one each then for Rob Holding, Joe Willock and Rhys Nelson. And for some reason I've left the rest of my... a script elsewhere, but I can tell you Everton won
2-0.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which goes into the debate that he didn't start. Moise Keane starts on Saturday, but things to watch out for tonight. Liverpool away to MK Dons, pretty much nailed on. Quevin Kelleher is going to start and go. Pep Linders did the press conference yesterday, the assist, because Klopp was on his way back from Milan, and he talked him up. And I actually got a text off someone on Merseyside who covers Liverpool, and he was looking for pronunciation on Quevin. So,
nice.
You know, they're bracing themselves.
If they get it wrong, it's your fault, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Well,
you're
they might
full
say
responsibility.
They might get Quevin right, but they might call him Kelleher. That might be the worry. But Manchester United are at home to Rochdale, League One Rochdale, managed by Brian Barry Murphy, son of Jimmy Barry Murphy. You'd imagine United are going to win that one as well. And so it's the other...
You'd imagine, but we've...
the other stories of note are really the managerial merry-go-round in Intercounty. We know looks like Liam Cahill is going to become the Waterford manager, first outsider since Davy Fitz. Davy Fitz in the headlines himself, because looks like he's going to Galway, which would be a real blow for Wexford. We had Niall Kennedy, the Wexford boxer, in here on Off the Brawl last week, and he was wearing his Wexford wristband, and he was saying, no, like, we need him, we've got to do everything to keep him there, but it would be a massive blow for Wexford. And then the other appointment, Wicklow have a new manager as well. So that's it.
All right. Good stuff, Phil. Thanks for that. One last thing that we were going to show you for the sports news here. This is from John Cardinelli, South African sports journalist. The Bucks are a bit short on numbers today for an opposed back session. So consultant Felix Jones in pink is filling in. Still got it. So Felix, obviously, his career was cut short. Look for the pink jersey. There he is at the back. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice little Gerber kick. Finds touch. And I wonder, is he pretending to be Ireland in this? Is that like
kind of Johnny Sexton sort of?
Yeah, or is it? Do they think that
that's their own backs move? Is it
actually going to have Joey Carberry playing fullback for Ireland in that game? Who knows? But certainly John Cardinelli was there, and Felix would have been taken out of it, wouldn't he? In real life. But there you go. That's the Brains Trust Irish Rugby helping.
This is like the Luxembourg press conference. I'm waiting for Boris Johnson to sit down there, but he hasn't yet.
We're going to get to Dan McDonnell in a minute to talk to him about. He was actually at Troy Parrott's debut last night. Big excitement, obviously, in Irish sport for the young lads coming through at various clubs. This competition suddenly becomes very important from an Irish sports team's perspective. In the meantime, here's some more Kevin Kilbane talking about the alternative best 11 in the world following FIFA's best awards on Monday night. Have a look.
Gone in goal, Alisson. I don't think there's any other goalkeeper. He could have gone with Edison, I suppose, because he's had a very good season. But I think Alisson, I think big saves, crucial saves. You think of the save against Napoli in the knockout stages that got Liverpool to the knockout stages and big, big moments throughout the Champions League. So Alisson, I think Alisson is quite an easy one to go with.
So you're two fullbacks?
Two fullbacks. I've gone with Liverpool's two. I was difficult. I was torn at right back, but I think in the big games in the second half of the season, Trent Alexander-Arnold did great.
I'm putting him in for his corner alone against Barcelona.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Do you know, so what they've done here on the actual official team, you can leave Kev's team up there on the screen, but what they've done here is they've gone with only one fullback to make room for... you've got De Ligt
and Van Dijk. They've probably gone four defenders, haven't they? Yeah, I've gone actual defenders.
Van Dijk and De Ligt.
Van Dijk and De Ligt.
Whereas they've gone with De Ligt, Ramos and Van Dijk. They've gone with three centre-halves.
Yeah.
So your team...
But Andy Robertson has clearly... was clearly better than Marcelo last season across the course of the season. With his assist throughout the Champions League season and the Premier League year, Andy Robertson was the best left back in European football last year.
Okay.
Definitely.
What's your midfield three?
Well, midfield, I've had to try and get a few others in the side here. For what they did, getting to Frenkie de Jong sitting in midfield, I've gone with Lionel Messi and Mane as the next two ahead of him, simply because I've gone Messi, because Messi did play a lot of his football a bit deeper last season, even though he did get 54 goals. Sadio Mane, I've gone Messi and him left and right of De Jong in midfield. And I've gone Ronaldo, Mbappe and Tadic up front.
Tadic is the one that's raising eyebrows. I know he was exceptional against Real Madrid that day.
Tadic scored 38 goals last year, I think.
All right, not bad from Dusan Tadic. We're going to get down in just a second. How exciting is it, John, to be a Spurs fan when there's a young Irish lad coming through?
Well, it's just great for Troy Parrott that he seems to be rated by Pochettino. What he normally does, Pochettino, is he puts players onto the fringes of the first team, like Oliver Skip has been around for about a couple of years now on the fringes, and then he brings them in slowly. So he kind of sees, I think, Parrott in the mould of Ryan Mason or, you know, Harry Winks a few years ago. Harry Winks was very gradually brought into the situation, and then he ends up playing against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. And in the press conference after the game, I think he said that, look, we just need to relax here, give Troy Parrott a bit of time. He'll need a year or two to... Maybe he'll end up going out on loan. That could end up happening. And that might not be a bad thing for him.
Does he go out on loan now as a 17-year-old? Does he go out on loan as an 18-year-old? What's the order? Do you think they keep him around this year?
I think they keep him around. I would say they keep him around and keep him like in the kind of the under-23 squad. Let him develop. From speaking to people in Irish football at a kind of underage level, I think the thing with Troy Parrott is he's got good movement and he has just got that eye and that kind of knack of getting goals, which is just... priceless commodity as a striker. He has that knack of being in the right spot, a bit like Harry Kane.
The under 21 goal he scored, where he seemed to lose it underneath his feet for a while and he just found it and was calm enough just to lift it over the keeper.
That is something I don't think you can really train.
I think that's what has people
innate.
Excited.
And like even watching Obafemi last night back and putting it on a plate for Danny Ings against Southampton. So look, I think we've been so desperate for green shoots, if excuse the pun, in Irish football, that like even if the fact that we're covering Troy Parrott, I mean, what would have been doing in the late 1990s and Robbie Keane was playing week in, week out, of course, is a different world then. It was much easier to get into the Premier League, but it is promising. We had Robbie Brady at Man United, like was the new thing, was the biggest, hottest new thing, and like eventually he did have a successful career and it still does have a successful career in English football, but maybe not at the Manchester United level, at very good clubs. Like
he had a horrific knee injury as well, needed microfracture surgery on his knee, which like it's very difficult to come back from. And that set his career back a year at a very key moment where, you know, you're a bright young thing. It's like, well, actually, you know, so many things have to go right for Troy Parrott to have a decent career, and a decent career will be playing Championship football for 10 years. Sorry, that would be an excellent career, really, when you consider the millions of kids around the world who are trying to make it that he's in the competition with. So,
Aaron Connolly came on against Newcastle caught a bit of that. He was really good for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, he should play tonight for Brighton against Villa.
So there is a little bit of excitement around for the first time in a couple of years, isn't
there? Yeah, in a long time. Probably since Kerr's kids, I would say.
Hang on a sec. Hang on a second. We have some breaking news. Now I hear it. What's that music? What's
Hi,
this?
I'm Kevin Kilbane, and I'm thrilled to be taking part in Dancing on Ice.
Hey, live and Ryan, glorious Technicolor. His first interview. Oh, how do we secure this? Kev, you're live.
What's happening? How are you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know what's going on, Jer. I haven't got a clue. But anyway, we'll go with the ride and let's see how it goes.
Have you got your suit, Kev?
No, not yet, John. No, I've got the skates, so we'll give you a look at the skates.
Yeah.
One sec. I should have had them out ready for you.
Yeah, I've also got Dan McDonald shocked on the other line. Dan, how are you for immediate reaction? Forget Troy Parrott. This is the biggest thing in Irish sports.
What's your news, Dan?
Well, this is unbelievable. I mean, I was excited about Troy Parrott's development over the next couple of months, but this is something completely different now. I mean, I'm actually sort of reeling with that information now, to be honest. I suppose everyone has a price, don't they?
Lads.
Hey, show us the skates. Oh my God, they're proper. They're choppy in half.
Yeah, no. Lethal stuff, honestly.
How fit are you, Kev? This is like a very fit thing that, you know, you're like...
Yeah, I'm not fit enough, Jay. That's the problem, yeah. So the first thing I said, I was having a chat with Nathan the other day around it, and Nathan said, mate, you need to get in the gym right now. So that's where I need to be. I probably need to maybe just try and tone up a little bit as well.
Yeah, isn't there... I mean, I haven't seen that much of it, but isn't there like a lot of top-off sort of macho, look at my six-pack thing going on?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. Yeah, that's probably the most intimidating thing, really. So I'm going to have to make sure that maybe do a few sit-ups and a bit of core work as well.
So it emerged this morning, the papers, they didn't leave with you this morning. They're with Maura from Love Island. She's going to be in it. So she's stiff competition.
That's the biggest Irish story, Jerry. That's all you need to know. Maura, yeah. Longford girl. My mum's from Longford, Jerry, as you know. So there you go. We've got something in common already.
Longford and Ackle, the two masses representing. So you're going to be going for the Everton vote. Do you try and reach across the Mersey to get the Liverpool vote, to get the whole kind of Liverpool-Irish vote? You're going to get the Irish vote? Are you going to get the football votes? Jeez, Kev, you've got a chance here.
I've not thought about tactics here yet. I've just, I maybe get the sympathy vote. I think that's what it is once I get on the ice, but we'll see how it goes. I'd say I've not even thought about it yet. This has happened very quickly in the last week or so, and now I've got to maybe get me skates on, excuse the pun. So there you go. Let's see how it goes.
And where will you train? There's an ice rink out on the
A bit of both. It'll be over UK-based, bits over here as well. There's no real ice rinks, not that I've been told here anyway.
There's one that I definitely know of, isn't it? Oh, maybe that was roller skating. Jesus, I'm wrong.
Is there one in Belfast?
Yeah. The one in Dundrum comes in for around Christmas time, I think.
Right,
as well.
Okay.
When's the last time you were on a rink, Kevin?
About 2 years ago.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I was with my daughters, yeah. So I can go forward, I can stop myself on the wall at the side of the ice rink, and that's the extent of my ice skating ability, yeah.
You never had ankle injuries, though. You'll be grand. It was your back that was your problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I early on in my career, I had a few ankle injuries. That it's maybe a slight worry, but no, I was lucky enough to be fair. Ankle and knees were never really a problem for me. But my back, that's the thing. It's doing the lifts, isn't
it?
Yeah.
You're going to need a small partner.
I hope I get a light partner, then it shouldn't be too much of a problem for me. But I don't know. We'll go with the flow, won't we?
Yeah, and so, you know, obviously you're going to be a darling of the tabloids, what with your raucous lifestyle.
who said that?
Sources say that you're going to be a darling of the tabloids because of your raucous lifestyle.
Well, I don't. Of course, Joe, as you know, a couple of quiet pints in local pubs for me, and that'll be the extent of my raucous lifestyle, yeah.
Very good. You're going to have to tame that down or else, you know, that's just, this is just... You know, you're the first bad boy of
bad boy.
Dancing on Ice.
No, that's harsh. That's harsh.
Oh, my God. Dan, do you have anything to say to you? Kev's live on the line.
I don't know what to say. Yeah, I mean, this is it. Like, it's the scrutiny on the personal life. You're just going to have to get, you know, his couple of pints now will suddenly you know, there's suddenly going to be a story. I'm not sure if he's ready for the attention. And I assume there's going to have to be some kind of, like, volatile relationship with a dance partner as well. But that seems to be a, that seems to be a par for the course with this thing as well. So, I mean, this is a, I don't know if he's prepared for it.
Can I respond to that? Why does it have to be a volatile relationship with a dance partner? Why does that have to be the case?
I think it just seems to be how it works, Kev. You know, I think that's, I think that's probably part of your contract. You know, you have to sort of be spotted in a Manchester hostelry, the station, or somewhere like this. You know, with his dance partner. It's all
tempestuous
speculation, but it's all part of building publicity. You have to sign up for it. I assume that's in your contract. I assume that's how it works.
No, that's not in my contract. No. It's just be yourself, Dan. You know, you don't have to change anything about yourself.
So what is in your contract then?
Don't fall.
No, we're talking about the contract. Everyone wants to know.
Jesus Christ, Dan. We're live. You can ask that off air. Right. Kevin, how are you feeling about the whole thing? I mean, it's the worst question in journalism, but like, I'm actually genuinely interested. Are you terrified? Are you scared? Are you apprehensive? Are you excited? What is it?
Genuinely nervous, yeah, of course. John asked the question before about last time I was on ice. The extent of my ice skating ability is literally forward around an ice rink just with the kids. So that's been it. So there's a lot of nervousness there. See how it goes. I'm bound to fall on my arse. I'm bound to make a fool of myself, aren't I? But I'm looking forward to it. I am, genuinely am. It's that little bit of competitiveness that I can get my teeth into, have a little bit of go with it, and yeah, I'm just going to go with the flow. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm really going to enjoy it. Once I get starting, I think once I get onto the ice and once I get the hours under my belt, it's not going to be till January till the show starts. So I've got a bit of time now between now and then before the show starts. I can get that practice in and we'll see how it goes and have a laugh with it.
Yeah, we all know you're definitely not going to miss a session. You're going to be there every day. Always up for it. None of this.
I would like to think so. Yeah, unless anything else happens. But I'll definitely. I've got it. You know, if I'm in it now, I've got to give it a good crack, haven't I? That's the way that
yeah.
I look at it.
Yeah, you've got to try and win it. You've got the whole country's weights. Well, you and Maura, you've got to get her off pretty quickly. That's the whatever tactics, you know. Just do it nicely, obviously.
Stay off social media, Kev, when it's on.
Stay on it.
Stay off it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, John, I'm going to get abused as it is. So what more can I say about that? I've got to go with it, haven't I?
Yeah. Oh, no, I think you should be reading out the mean tweets. That should be a weekly Kev reads the mean tweets about his performances.
Anyone takes himself too seriously on social media, you've just got to block that out. No chance. I'm just going to go with it. Sod it. People can say what they want. They're going to fire at me, aren't they? So anyway.
You are dead right. You are dead right, Kev. Congratulations so far on the announcement, at least. And best of luck with it. We're all behind you.
Cheers, Joe. Thanks very much.
Good luck, Kev.
Fair play, Kev.
See you, Kev.
Exclusive with Kevin Kilbane giving his first interview this morning as the news breaks that he's going to be one of the Dancing on Ice stars. You were looking at me going, what the hell is he talking about Dancing on Ice this morning? For? We had a vague idea it was breaking today. So
yeah,
poor Jonica was like, why are we talking about Dancing on Ice?
I'm not prepared for this.
It turned out you knew a bit about it. But so there you go.
I've never been to an ice rink. No, so I've no idea really what this is all about.
No, we were just saying earlier that this is something that has bypassed me completely. I'm aware it exists, it's
having a clue.
Dan, you've got to go in about 5 minutes, so we'll talk to you about we'll talk about Troy Parrott in a minute. Give us your reaction to the breaking news about Kevin Kilbane.
Dan looks well.
Yeah, I had an inkling it was coming as well, but I didn't know when the announcement was. But I like how he slotted straight into, well, just hit, you know, we're going to take it one week at a time mode there. He just got into it. Like, even Kev, you have to remember, was always a safe pair of hands in a mixed zone during his career. So I assume if there's some kind of, like, Dancing on Ice mixed zone, like, you know, Kev will be, that's the one you want. Like, he's going to slot straight back into competitive mode. Those sports people never lose that instinct. But this is it now. He's all laughing about it now, but give it 1 week or two.
No.
He'll suddenly have the eyes on the prize. I think if he gets through a couple of weeks, he gets to go on tour as well. There's like a road show or something like that. So once you get through a certain number of weeks, all of a sudden he's part of a travelling stage show. So I don't know. It's a whole new world for him, nearly.
Yeah, you're familiar, obviously, with how this career path works. Are you a closet fan of the show?
No. I heard some whispers that this might be coming, so I have to look up maybe what it might entail. But yeah, I, like it's I mean, Maura from Love Island, as I mentioned, I wasn't aware of that aspect of things. I mean, this is definitely, you know, this is box office stuff.
Maura, and Michael Barrymore, which we didn't get into there.
Michael Barrymore?
Yes.
Wow.
Maura, Michael Barrymore and Kevin Kilbane together at last. Name your three ideal guests for a dinner party. Yeah. No one ever said that before. But after Christmas, it'd be like, oh yeah, I wouldn't mind spending some time with that trio.
Come down with me.
Who knows what the hell's going to happen at that party?
Yes, they definitely had something interesting to like a sort of, you know, off the ball gatherings as well. You know, I assume I assume you can sort of across codes. You know, you can all of a sudden he can open up a whole new network of contact books for you as well. You know,
look,
contact networks for you. So. Endless potential.
I'm just Blades of Glory is my one understanding of the whole ice skating thing, and I just can't wait to see him in one of those full length pink sequins.
Ruffles.
Ruffles. Is that what they're called?
Go with sort of Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan either.
Like, oh yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no rivalry with some bright young thing.
So long as he's the one doing the Tonya Harding as opposed to being the Nancy Kerrigan in the thing, then you know. Right, Troy Parrott, quickly, because I know you got to go. He was. How was it?
Yeah, I mean, I overheard a bit of your discussion coming on. It was a strange one, really, because like Spurs weren't great, and actually, you know, there's a bit of a negativity around Spurs at the moment. Just that they're a bit sluggish and things aren't firing. And you know, Colchester were very disciplined and defended very well and defended very sort of. Very organised. So for a debut for Troy Parrott, there wasn't a huge amount of space to work with. I sort of made the point in the piece I did that, like, you know, Irish teams don't, like Irish international sides won't have this type of possession against a packed defence. Generally, might even be the other way around sometimes. So, like, he had a few nice touches. He linked play okay at times. He kept dropping deep to try and get in the ball. But it just didn't happen for him in terms of maybe attacking opportunities that he would have liked. But as John, I think, mentioned there, this is just a step forward. I mean, I asked Pochettino about him afterwards, and he was adamant. Well, listen, he is going to be an important player for Spurs. There is no doubt. There is no sort of equivocation when it comes to that. But it's going to maybe take 1 year, 2 years of playing in these type of fixtures. And like he's on that circuit. I mean, sometimes players of his age are sent to places like Colchester. You know, and I think Parrott is taught, you know, he's rated above that in the sense that he's on the cycle of being a first team player, but you're not just going to come in and tear things up. This is about taking a step forward, and as I said, there's bigger things going on at Spurs at the moment. So he maybe just got caught up in a lethargic performance for everyone last night. But in terms of his own career, it's a pretty decent step forward still.
Daniel, just on the vibe of Spurs, it wasn't on TV because you were watching Portsmouth at Hampton. Did you get any kind of vibe of dissatisfaction? I mean, it's funny that Eriksen came on for Parrott and he missed the penalty, and I get the feeling at the moment Eriksen just does not want to be there.
Yeah, I was struck by it afterwards, like just in the press conference afterwards and the tone of the questions and stuff. I think there's possibly a bit of a feeling amongst the sort of the lads who maybe cover Spurs regularly, and you can tell that they're picking up on maybe Pochettino's bit of frustration from Pochettino as well, and he made reference maybe to January transfer market and just indirectly just the type of language and the type of tone which suggests that everything just isn't quite great at the moment. And yeah, I mean, Eriksen, obviously, what, you know, there was a sense that you know, he could have been gone, as everyone knows, and it just seems that they're in a sort of a weird limbo at the moment, and that it was very hard to just put your finger on what was wrong with them last night. I mean, it wasn't like they're missing something in this particular area. There was just an overall lethargic nature to how they played that I think would worry you. And I think there was that feeling that, yeah, and I mean, even with the Troy Parrott hot on, because Pochettino was a great manager for him, and he's got a great reputation for developing players, and you just hope that that regime is going to stick together. But there seems to be seeds of doubt there about the whole thing right now.
Any worry that Pochettino might feel that his work is done now at Spurs?
Yeah, I think you just wonder, you know, like what more can he do there if he feels that, like, if the team has not progressed from last year, and all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where, okay, Eriksen does look to go in the next window, next available opportunity, are the top two just still the same distance ahead that they were before? I think their record in the league away from home, I think, since the turn of the year was actually very poor. And, yeah, it's possible that they might be approaching a crossroads here. And I'm sure Pochettino might sense the way things are going. Unless for some reason he's going to be given massive... He signed new players that aren't ready to sort of come into the proper first 11 yet. So there is just listen to the mood of people who know they've seen better and watch it. There is a sense that things just aren't quite right. And that's something that you could pick up on last night, definitely.
All right, Dan, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Thanks, lads. See ya.
Dan McDonald giving us some immediate reaction to the news that Kevin Gilban is... I mean, sorry.
Troy Parrott
played last night for the very first time. Right, a reminder to enter the brilliant competition we're running all this week on OTBAM with thanks to Expert Electrical. We're giving you the chance to win a top-of-the-range LG 55-inch OLED TV. To enter, share the hashtag OTBAM wherever you're watching or listening to the show this morning and tell us who won the 1999 Rugby World Cup. Expert Electrical is Ireland's largest electrical retailer. You can shop online at expert.ie or you can visit one of their 67 stores nationwide. There's always an expert near you. All right, John Dunica, thanks, lads, for popping in this morning. Jerry Nixon is the head of sponsorship at Vodafone Rugby. He's going to be in studio next to talk about their work with the Irish rugby team and why they've signed up for another 4 years. We'll be back straight after these.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
The 2019 Boyle Sports World Grand Prix Darts is back at the City West Convention Centre, Dublin, from the 6th to the 12th of October. See 32 of the biggest darting stars on the planet, including world number one Michael Van Gerwen, former Grand Prix champion Daryl Gurney, plus fan favourite Peter Wright. Get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.ie and search Darts. The 2019 Boyle Sports World Grand Prix Darts at City West. Game on.
Join Bruce Betting now for a risk-free first bet up to €100. That's right. New Irish accounts can enjoy a risk-free first bet up to €100. So if your first bet loses, we'll refund your stake with a free bet. Now that's giving you more. Bruce Betting. In store, online, and now on your phone. T's and C's apply. Please gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
OTB AM.
So Vodafone recently announced that they are extending their partnership with the IRFU for another 4 seasons, which will take them all the way through to the next Rugby World Cup cycle. And I'm delighted to say that Jerry Nixon, head of sponsorship with Vodafone, is here with us to talk us through the business of the Rugby World Cup and how it all works. Jerry, you're very welcome.
Morning. Hi, Cher.
I'm surprised you're in Ireland as opposed to in Japan. Is that not one of the...
Still here. Yeah, still here. We'll travel over a later stage. But there's still some work to be done here in terms of the campaign and getting things out the door, but certainly a very exciting start.
That's a good point, actually. I wasn't going to bring something to later on, but obviously old school sponsorships 15, 20 years ago, you got some tickets, you got some advertising hoardings, and you got your logo on the jersey. With the Rugby World Cup, with the way that they make their money, you can't actually have your logo on the jersey. So I presume the stuff that happens here is actually far more important than the stuff that's happening out there or wherever that may be.
Yeah, it is for us. I mean, you know, obviously our audience is based here in Ireland. You know, it's Vodafone Ireland sponsors the Irish team. So, you know, we're interested in what our customers here are seeing and feeling. So actually activity out in Japan is pretty light for us. And obviously there's a slight difference in terms of how we operate within, say, Six Nations, where we can't have the logo on the shirt. We can't have a presence in the stadium. So it is slightly different for a World Cup. But obviously it's our first time around, so it's a little bit different but interesting.
Yeah, so the decision to go again, obviously, I mean, I'm sure these things aren't decided overnight, but obviously it was trending in the right direction for you over the last 18 months or so. What trends are you looking for? What are you kind of seeing as a return for a massive investment like this?
Well, you know, I mean, pretty early on, you know, we signed in 2015, took over in 2016, and pretty early we could see that it was having a hugely positive impact for our brand, and more importantly, and probably the most important thing with sponsorship, is we had a great relationship with the IRFU, and that's been building up over time. So the kind of trends that we were looking at, and it really depends on what brand you are. Some brands will go into trying to raise brand awareness if you're a new entrant into the market. For Vodafone, as a brand that's kind of well established in the Irish marketplace, it was more about driving brand engagement, so getting people kind of, you know, tapping into something that people already have a huge passion for, which is Irish rugby, and kind of leveraging that to kind of have a positive impact on our brand.
Okay, so that is about having a conversation with your fans, with the Irish rugby fans and people who you want to be your customers and people who are currently your customers.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so I mean, it's about, you know, they've already got a predisposed passion for Irish rugby. So, you know, it's about us being able to talk to them beyond the regular conversation that we have about our our 4G network or our services, it's about elevating the conversation to something that's a bit more emotional.
Yeah.
You know, and trying to connect with customers on that level that's beyond just the technical products and solutions that obviously are there and we need to continue to do. But, you know, it's really important that people have a brand that they look at and respect. And obviously it's about us showing support for, you know, the great institution that is Irish rugby and us, you know, having a positive impact on Irish society.
Do you feel like you're part of... Because rugby, like... wasn't as big a sport as hurling and football, or as GA and football over the last, you know, half century, but it's certainly closed the gap over the last two decades. So there's room for a proactive sponsor to be a part of that growth as opposed to just kind of piggybacking off it.
Yeah, we'd certainly like to think so. I mean, when we sat down with the IRFU in the very early stages of the sponsorship, we tried to find, you know, what was the commonalities between us and the IRFU? You know, what is the shared ambition, if you like, of what we're both trying to achieve? And pretty, you know, it's very clear that the IRFU have a mandate to grow the game. And we said, well, look, that really works for us as well. You know, we're about trying to roll our network around the whole country. So, you know, we don't want to just talk to people in Dublin or in Cork or Limerick. It's about expanding beyond it. And I think there is a misconception there that rugby is only played in these very specific areas around Ireland. I think it's a misconception. But, you know, through our, you know, activation and through our advertising around the sponsorship, we've been really... you know, determined to help the IRFU to talk to people that are beyond just the core traditional, you know, traditional fans. So when we make ads, we make sure that we include people from all over the island. We make sure that we don't just go to those traditional heartlands. We talk about Tadhg Furlong, who doesn't come from necessarily a rugby background. You know, our latest campaign, which is, you know, Ireland's Ball, we went out to 32 people around the country and got a fingerprint from each one of them. We made it into a ball, and the ball has gone with the team to the World Cup as a representation of the support that they have from around the island. But, you know, the people that we talked to were not necessarily traditional rugby people. You know, we talked to people like the Liberty Saints, who are an inner city rugby rugby club here in Dublin. You know, we talked to a team down in the Gaeltacht that plays Irish, plays rugby through Irish. So these are the stories that are there and that are really interesting that I don't think people see as the everyday rugby person. But that's really important to
and
us.
And so you as a brand can help uncover those stories. That's the other thing that you guys bring, is the experience of creating content around a story. Because that's really what advertising, when it became good in the 80s, they started telling stories about brands as opposed to just kind of saying, you know, our cola is made with a certain type of sugar and the other ones use a different type of sugar and that's why ours is better. It was like, it was something completely different.
It's trying to find a connection with people, you know, and ultimately, you know, when we got back to the kind of very early starts of the sponsorship, we did things like documentaries. Because if you remember in 2016, it was quite a new team. You know, we'd got a couple of guys that retired, the likes of Paul O'Connell. We'd come off probably a disappointing World Cup in 2015, and we wanted to get people to know who the players were. You know, so Tadhg Furlong, who wasn't a household name like he is today, you know, he featured quite heavily in those documentaries and those early piece of advertising we did, because people got to know him and actually realised he's a great character. And that's really what it's about, is trying to make a greater connection. So, you know, our brand is all about connecting people, if you think about it. You know, that's what our technology does. So through the sponsorship, we're trying to relive that ability for us to connect people.
That's the other great evolution in sponsorship, is that it's not the badge and tag, it is now content creation, it is now understanding exactly how you can deal with the player. So part of that becomes, you guys become a producer, and some of that is down to fostering relationships with the individuals themselves. So, like, I mean, Tadhg Furlong's probably a good example. It turns out he is a media superstar. Like, you know, nobody knows that when you kind of first make the phone call to go, oh, you've got an interesting backstory, and, like, his parents are also amazing with their ability to be raconteurs and one-liners too. So that's something that's very different. It's a different skill set that you guys needed to acquire.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you're dealing with guys who are superstars on the pitch, but what you're trying to do is trying to show the human element behind that hero. So, you know, a lot of traditional rugby advertising was quite heroic and quite macho, and I actually wanted to break that down to say, look, the guys, when they're on the pitch, they're absolutely heroes, but behind that, they've got families. They walk the same way you and I do on the street. So, you know, we featured some of the family members of players. Conor Murray's dad was in one of our ads, as was Tadhg Furlong's dad. So they're, you know, like, actually making that family connection. And what we've tried to do then is we've tried to tap into some of the interests that they have. So, you know, those ads and those stories are actually real events that have happened. So Tadhg Furlong genuinely got a letter from the IRFU when he was on the farm working to say he got a call up. So, you know, these are tapping into real stories that happened, you know. And we take that a little bit further, as we've done a piece with Robbie Henshaw, who's hugely into music. So instead of asking him to stand up and maybe speak in an event, which maybe he doesn't want to do, we'd say, well, look, you know, can we talk to you about your passion, which is music? And we did a piece with him and Sharon Shannon, recording some music. So they're, you know, it's tapping into the players. It's making them feel more comfortable to do the work that they'd actually rather do, rather than just putting them in front of, you know, as I said, 20 business people if it doesn't suit them.
Is success just about sales? Is that how that works? Or
I mean, no. I mean, look, ultimately, you are trying to drive a commercial advantage. Of course you are. But, you know, that the way we track it is purely around brand engagement and brand involvement. So, you know, we're trying to get people to look at our brand beyond just the products and solutions that are there. But it is also about contributing back into our society. You know, I mean, we're trying to build a gigabit society through our technology, and that has to happen. But for people to recognise you and to want to engage with you, they need to see your brand out there supporting things like rugby and other sponsorships.
And what happens when they ship 50 points against England and Twickenham and the line-out malfunctions and you're like, oh my God, what have we got?
I mean, to be honest with you, we don't. You know, I mean, the whole idea behind the platform that is Team Voss that you've probably seen in throughout our activation is that, you know, you're there no matter what. And what we looked was, I mean, we did a lot of research when we were developing the sponsorship in the early days. And something that Joe Schmidt said in one of the interviews was that he said, sport is one of the most interdependent sports he'd ever been involved with. Rugby is one of the most interdependent sports he'd ever been involved with. And if you think about it, it's very true. You can have the best pack in the world, but if your number nine isn't any good, you're not going to go anywhere. So the power of the collective in rugby is really strong. And we felt that that really kind of tapped into something that we were trying to say to our customers around connection and pulling people together. So, you know, we've taken inspiration from, you know, things like Italian 90 or, you know, Katie Taylor, Stephen Roach, these kind of huge events in Irish sporting life where the whole country came together to get behind either an individual or a team. And it wasn't that they knew a whole lot about the sport. I mean, football in 1990 was not a huge sport. It was a very big sport, but probably not as big as it is today. Not that many people knew about cycling or even women's boxing when Katie Taylor won the gold. But these are things that got people together, to come together. And that's really the ethos behind Team of Us. It's actually not focusing on, you know, the end result. It's actually the enjoyment of coming together. And, you know, like, the other thing about sponsorship, it's long term. You know, we've just signed another 4-year deal. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I hope that 8 years is the start, not the end of the relationship. And, you know, if you're in that length of time, you're going to see ups and downs.
Yeah, well, you could see that when the announcement was made, Paddy Power from the RFU was talking about they liked Team of Us because it was this kind of new thing that they hadn't done. And it is that bit of marketing that they can't do themselves where you're like, oh, you should all come and, you know, really, we're this kind of open organisation. You guys actually can as a brand say, look, hang on a second, this is the principle behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, look, you know, Vodafone is a huge global company. We work with some brilliant advertising agencies here in Dublin, and we also have some great media partnerships as well. So we're able to drive those messages through in a way that the IRFU can't do it. But really what's key to that is making sure that we work with the rights holder, with the IRFU, to understand what they want to achieve and really help them. And as I said, we've built up a fantastic relationship and they are absolutely world-class in the way they operate, so that really helps us.
So obviously success on the field has been non-stop pretty much since you guys arrived. There have been very significant difficulties off the field. What do you do when something like that happens as a brand?
Well, I mean, look, first of all, you don't rely on success on field, you know, so the whole strategy was really built around, you know, making the whole experience of rugby more enjoyable and seeing how we can, you know, improve fan engagement. So we do things like the highlights apps that we do through the My Vodafone app, you know, things like that. So, you know, you don't rely on the team's performance. But when things go wrong, I mean, that is key to having a great alignment with the rights holder, in this case, the IRFU. So we have a great relationship that's based on shared values and there's a lot of trust. You know, we know that if something goes wrong, it'll be dealt with in a way that we as an organisation would deal with it as well. And, you know, and that's really the only way to get through issues is to make sure that there's a great alignment there in the beginning. And if that's there, then generally those issues are dealt with easily.
OK, the one thing I did want to talk to you about as well was something that you'd said in around the time that the announcement was coming up, that you look at examples of what IBM does for Wimbledon and what SAP do for the German national team, that you want to use your technology to actually benefit. I mean, that's kind of an unbelievable sweet spot to try and get to, where suddenly you're providing data or information or something that the Irish team are going, ooh, this gives us a competitive advantage.
Yeah, and it's not just the team, I suppose. It's also the IRFU more broadly in their job to grow the game or the fans' experience. But absolutely, look, ultimately, we're a technology company. That's what we do. You know, when we go in every day, we're trying to connect people to each other using our technology, be it 4G and 5G, which has just launched. But, you know, it is about, I mean, we've seen other examples like SAP in Germany that have done amazing things using their technology that actually helps to drive team performance. And that's certainly our ambition for the next 4 years because, you know, we are moving into more of a technological age where we're becoming more of a technology-driven company. So it's very much an ambition of ours to see how we use our technology to make a better organisation for the IRFU, maybe help the team in some way, we don't know, but more importantly, make sure the fans can engage in it in a seamless way using either our 4G technology or 5G technology as it comes down the line.
So the evolution of sponsorship, just to finish this up, you know, I talked about from 20 years ago to now, what do you see next? What is coming next and how sponsorships, the big sponsorships, are going to work?
Yeah, I think it is that space around shared ambition and partnership. You know, I think that's really key. I mean, you alluded to it earlier. You know, 20 years ago, you handed over a check, you put your logo on the jersey and you walked away and you got some free tickets. And that's not really what it's about anymore. It is about creating a shared ambition. It's more about partnership than it's ever been before. So, you know, the importance of having a rights holder and a brand that actually believe in the same values and are trying to achieve the same things. As I said, us, we're trying to roll a network around the whole country. The IRFU are trying to grow a game of rugby around the whole country. So clearly there's a very clear shared ambition there. And I think, you know, I don't think you're going to continue to see, like you might have in the past, where a chairman might pick, you know, we'll sponsor that because I like another sport or whatever. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I think it is more down to the KPIs. There is more business rigor behind it. I mean, the investment is getting larger. Therefore, it has to be justified. Ultimately, you know, there needs to be a commercial rationale behind these things. But, you know, you can still do that in a way that's beneficial to the asset holders and ultimately to society at large if you're contributing to growing sport and making people more active, which is, you know, ultimately a huge gain for everybody.
And I presume there's a massive bonus tied into it when we win the World Cup.
Well, I'd gladly pay that over.
On that note, Jerry, good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Off the ball. Oh, wow. This is aggressive.
I'm washed off the ball. I'm Scottish. I'm on YouTube.
Off the ball.
You know what? We met a South African last night and he was there. He knew the Dublin won 5 in a row because he watched us off the ball.
He did.
He really, and he lives in Thailand.
I've watched Off the Ball on YouTube. The good boys.
We love you. We love you. We love you. And everywhere we follow. We follow.
We absolutely love it.
Off the ball.
This is OTB Sports Radio,
Ireland's first and only sports radio station.